Wendy, just to reiterate what Steve Bertrand already shared with us, the wind advisory will start tonight at 6 p.m. It's a 24-hour wind advisory. It will end tomorrow night at 6 p.m. Expect gusts of winds of up to 50 miles per hour. There's your wind report today.
Are you mocking me a little
bit? I'm not. There? I like to know when it's going to be windy and when it isn't.
Well, this is extreme windy conditions.
A lot of wind coming our way.
Wind scares me more than anything.
Wind is the scariest element of all weather elements.
Walk around downtown and it blows things off buildings and scaffolding. And I had my roof blew off once in a windstorm like
your
this.
Wind? Actually, your whole roof blew off?
Yeah, and it was this time of year because remember it was maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago, a huge sustained
wind. Oh, yeah, I remember that day.
Well, it was a big storm, Wendy. Again, I'm really feeling a little assaulted already.
Don't feel, please. We're all in this together. When it comes to wind, Steve, we're all in this together.
I remember this clearly because I have a section of my roof, the most of it is a flat rubber roof. And the wind got under the western edge and it started, you know, flapping in the storm and the whole house shook and it took the entire roof off in one piece and dropped it in my driveway.
Oh, man.
And
that's serious.
I remember because it was Veterans Day because two World War II veterans, Al and Harold, who lived across the street from me, came over and helped me cut it up. They did most of the work, the World War II vets, while I was supervised.
How about that?
But I remember that it was Veterans Day, so it was right about now.
I have a dead tree in the backyard that I have to get cut down, but all the tree companies I've called, it is completely intertwined with the electrical wires.
Right.
But there are big, long, tall dead branches, and with this wind that's coming, I'm worried the branches are going to come down on my house.
That's, well, with good reason. Steve, all you can do is warn people, and people need to be told when extreme wind is coming our way, we need to be warned.
Again, it's a 24-hour wind advisory that starts at 6, and it expires
at 6 tomorrow.
That's right.
Oh, it's going to be, it's Windmageddon is what it is, Wendy.
It doesn't flow off the tongue.
Windmageddon does not sound good.
It's Winterfest.
It's Winterfest.
How about Gustageddon?
Gustageddon?
That's not good either.
Gustageddon, of course,
Wednesday.
Played with
Wednesday.
We have a winner, everybody. Woo! Please hold your phone calls. Kevin, the producer, has won the Derby.
He should write more funny jokes for the show.
Right. Only for special occasions. All right, let's talk about the debate that you didn't see and I didn't see.
Yeah, what do we need to know, Steve?
Well, it was more substantive than probably any of the
was
previous
it really?
Debates.
Was it?
Yes, and I know because I fell asleep halfway through. Actually, three-quarters of the way.
How long did it go?
2 hours for the main event. The undercard was, I think, an hour and a half, maybe.
Sure, we've turned it into boxing now. The undercard, the main event.
Yeah, and so it was funny. I don't have the audio here, but, you know, the CNBC debate was just a disaster on every front. I mean, the candidates deserved some of the blame, too, but certainly the questioners didn't do a very good job. And so this one was very studious, very issue-oriented, to a fault almost. I mean, they didn't really press people like I think might have been nice, but then right at the end, Neil Cavuto said something to the effect of, well, this was a stellar debate, and it's because we made it about them, not us.
Which, so that was a slam at the other debates.
And also people. Then means that at the very end, he did turn out making about
he
him.
Did.
But, yeah.
Yes, he did. did you feel there was a clear-cut winner in the last couple of debates, depending on who you talk to? They go, well, she won or he won or they won. Was that the feeling last night?
I don't think they're coming out with a big winner. Rubio did well again. Cruz did well, although he had sort of a Texas debate moment.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Rick Perry was going to eliminate three federal departments and he couldn't remember the third one 4 years ago? Well, Cruz did that last night. He wants to eliminate five departments and he says they're the Commerce Department, the Education Department, the data department, the
and then he
Commerce Department.
Oh, no.
So he had four of the five, but he had to list Commerce twice.
They're allowed to have notes in front of them. Right, they have notes.
I don't know, probably.
How come on a key point like that they wouldn't just jot down the specifics?
I don't know. It's just funny because, you know, it was the exact same thing that happened to a Texas politician 4 years ago. So
this is the first of the debates that I have not watched, and I was so split on this because I want to feel well informed. I want to be in on it. But by the same token, I feel like I've seen this movie before.
Yep.
I think I'm in the mode right now of once they narrow it down a little bit more, because now it just seems like there's still so many candidates. And I know, what was the formatting yesterday, Steve, that they had 8 candidates on stage instead of 10? Is that what they were doing yesterday?
Yes, they had opened up a trap door on Chris Christie.
Yeah.
And who was the other? Mike Huckabee.
And they must be thrilled to not be in the major debate. That must be, to them, that must be as insulting as can be, right?
Yeah, you know, Christie kept a positive face on all of it,
yeah.
And he did. He just dominated the undercard yesterday.
Oh, did he?
So
yeah.
That might work for him. You know, it was a tough thing because they took these national polls, and I think it was 2.5% you had to register to get in the debate.
Yeah.
And Christie wasn't there. Now, he very much is there. He's at 6%, I think, in New Hampshire, which is a key early state.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
But you know, think of it. So people excluded from the debate didn't have 3% of the likely voters supporting
them. Isn't that something?
That's a pretty small number.
Can you clear up? There was a moment, and again, I didn't see any of it. I read about it this morning. Was there some moment where Donald Trump was lobbying for Jeb Bush to be able to have a chance to speak? Did that happen at some point last night?
It was fairly early on, and there was John Kasich kept trying to make his point, and it was Bush's turn to speak or something, and Trump said, let Bush speak, let him speak. And so then Jeb Bush said, well, I just want to thank Donald Trump for allowing me to speak at the debate. Yeah, but that's about as, you know, Rand Paul got in a couple of, and Marco Rubio, Marco Rubio is like a cactus, man. I don't think you want to go after him because he seems ready to come back every time. And Paul was going after Rubio saying, look, you know, he called
him a separatist. Right. He said his views on America when it comes to foreign policy.
Isolationist.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
But, you know, Rand Paul was going after Rubio for a couple of big spending programs, one in the military and one I think it had to do with child care or tax credits. And Rand Paul says, well, that's not conservative. You know, that's blowing up the budget. And Rubio says, well, we all know he's an isolationist.
Oh,
so, I mean, he was ready and boom, he had it. And, you know, it's. So I think Rubio is most likely the one to be avoided when it comes to personal attacks like that.
Maybe.
Did everybody admit they'd kill baby Hitler?
Oh, I did not see that come up. No, I didn't.
And, Bush was, boy, that's a great question to ask him. Well, yes, I'd kill baby Hitler.
Right.
Well, yeah, you don't answer those questions. You just don't.
Just the concept of baby Hitler seems strange to me.
I mean, how do you get the mustache?
Does he have
that
I know.
Right.
But
I'm envisioning a pretty funny looking baby Hitler right now.
I don't know how that happens, but
God.
All right. So would you say to somebody like Wendy or me who didn't see the debate, you didn't miss much, or, oh boy, you really missed some action last night?
Well, you didn't miss action. You might have missed some illumination when it comes to policy, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't think anyone... You know, Jeb Bush, you know, sort of stopped the bleeding, maybe.
Did he?
But I don't think he didn't dominate or anything like that. So I would maybe put this as a little bit of a status quo debate.
And someone has texted us, no notes. They're not allowed notes.
They're not
that
allowed
means
notes.
No cell phones, tablets, notes, or props to help illustrate points.
Oh, how about that?
That seems kind of odd to me. I mean, they're not taking an ACT test. But
in previous debates, I've seen as one person is slamming
them.
Yeah,
they'll look down.
They'll look down and they'll take a pen and they'll write something down. Like,
changed the rules for this fourth GOP showdown.
Oh, interesting.
That
right.
According to International Business Times.
Could you have a magic slate? Would they allow a magic slate? They would? All right.
Yes, you could have a magic slate because that is not, technological.
That explains that Cruz supporter doing smoke signals in the back.
Right, now it all makes sense. All right, a break and then all kinds of things to talk about. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Oh, the winds of November took down the... Edmund Fitzgerald, 29 souls went to the bottom of Lake Superior, November 10th, 1975. I hit the post.
You did hit the post.
And then I talked all over it. Well, you know, Steve Bertrand has gotten us a little concerned over the wind, and he mentioned on a Veterans Day about, 15 years ago, he said, where part of his roof blew off.
Yep.
And the Edmund Fitzgerald went down in November because of those winds. And we were trying to figure out, what did you call it? Windmageddon?
Windmageddon was my word for it, yeah.
Well, we have some listeners who are much more creative than us.
Bring them. I would love to hear these.
By the way, the winds of November come early. It's a lyric in The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Thanks, 773. Breezapalooza.
I like Breezapalooza.
Although it's more than a breeze. A breeze to me is something on a summer night.
It's gentle.
Yeah.
A breeze is too gentle.
How about Blowmageddon?
When I managed a video store, we had a movie called that.
You had to go behind the curtain for that?
Yeah, that was in the back room. Yes, very popular title.
Someone wants to know if Ted Cruz reminds any of us of Will Forte.
Oh, he does. Yes, he does. That's excellent. Although he said, they asked him who should play him in a made-for-TV movie, and he said Mario Lopez.
Oh, well, that's not wishful thinking.
Yeah, Mario Lopez might not be the right guy, but there's a similarity, a similar look to those two guys.
I like Blowmageddon.
That one's got a nice sound to it. All right.
So debates and winds, the winds of time, the hands of time. Barbara, what did you want to talk about with the debate last night?
Hi, last night. You know, I had, for a few moments there, I thought Donald Trump was kind of like acting more professional, you know, without all his antics and all that. And, you know, and everybody was giving their opinions and stuff. But then again, he zeroes in on Carly Fiorina, a woman. You know, but with his comment of, why does she keep interrupting? Everyone else was putting in their opinions. And again, he zeroed in on the woman. He says he loves women, but I think he only likes them when they're submissive. So I'm done. He's a jerk. He's pathetic.
It's not been determined.
God, for our country's sake, he does not win.
You know, it's interesting to me to think about that when, you know, people blame Obama for everything.
Uh-huh.
But to have Donald Trump represent this fine country that all the veterans today have fought for is a mockery of the Oval Office, in my opinion.
Yeah, and again, why did he have to zero in on Carly when everyone else was giving their opinions? You know, and he did it again. So really, I don't think he loves women, and really, unless they are submissive to him.
That's Isn't that sad? Oh, well, thank you. We appreciate it, Barbara.
Maybe he'll go back to the times if he wins where women can't vote.
Right. We would regress to that.
Yes.
I get nervous because he has this defense mechanism that is like a fifth grade defense mechanism where if you say something he doesn't agree with, he calls you stupid or fat. Or
I know
ugly.
You are, but what am I kind
it's
of
that.
Thing.
He's got, I know you are, but what am I? He's got that. So I think to myself, well, that may serve him well now doing what he's done in the past. He's the CEO of a company. But when you've got your finger that close to the button where you could start a war with China or Russia or you name the country, that's a weird syndrome to have.
And he's like, you know, no, I don't apologize for anything. No one tells me what to do. That scares me about that
right.
button. And I know he doesn't really have his finger on the button.
It's a longer process than that. But still,
I know
he's if he were to get the job, there's some big, dangerous decisions to be made on a daily basis. And he just has this weird knee-jerk reaction to things. You go, uh-oh,
yeah, he's going to take his button and go home.
Steve, go ahead.
I'm really warming up to him.
Darn it, so is my husband.
I know several people who have said that recently. Yeah. What is
as president, though, because I'm warming up to him, too, being on the radio and talking about him and getting great sound bites and making us think that, you know, maybe a politico is not the person to run the
right.
country. But, God, I don't know if it's him.
No, I don't. I'm not saying I would vote for him or anything like that. That's
but why
not
are
my
you
role,
warming
but,
up to him? What has changed?
Well, first of all, as someone who is interested in answers, he answers questions.
Right.
He's not afraid of his answer.
Yeah.
God knows. But he he answers the question.
Yeah.
And he says, here's what I think, and here's why we can't do that, and here's why, you know, he's not... he's become a little more subdued, but I don't know. I've never, ever liked Donald Trump. I mean,
but all of a sudden,
anything
you find
he's ever
yourself...
done, I've never watched The Apprentice or any of that.
Yeah.
But I'm just, there's something endearing about
but
him.
But see,
I don't know.
When he has an idea, let's use the Wall of Mexico because I think it perfectly illustrates my point. When he comes with an idea that's just plain impossible, you're not going to build a wall that spans the United States that sanctions us off from Mexico and then send them a bill for it and expect to be paid. None of that could possibly happen. So when a guy throws all of their kind of clout towards an idea like that, don't you just go, uh-oh. That would be the guy in the White House who'd be making all those decisions?
Didn't you see Saturday Night Live? The president of Mexico is going to kiss him when he's
right.
out.
Right, right.
Well, yeah. I mean, a better example of that would be deporting 11 million people.
Right.
I mean, that's
impossible.
Just, it wouldn't happen.
Right.
I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm not endorsing him for president by any means.
Just warming up
but
to him.
But when you are trying to judge a candidate or hear an interview with someone, you know, he's actually genuinely answering the question.
Answering the question, and that I agree, and that shows confidence. And I love when, you know, parents do this sometimes too. They just answer a question and they say it with conviction.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's right or they know how to do it. So, yes, he's answering the questions, but how's he going to make all these things happen?
Well,
that's my question to him.
And people keep giving him a pass on, you know, they hit him so much on so many things. He keeps talking about how he used bankruptcy to you know, get out of bad deals, and he goes, and it's the law of the land, and everyone else does it, and, which is all true. But no one says, yeah, but your creditors were left holding your debt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sure, it was legal.
Yeah.
You were within your rights, but it also left other people paying for your mistake. And there hasn't been that follow-up yet, and I'm still waiting for that to come.
So if he becomes president, is he going to let the United States of America claim Chapter 11 bankruptcy?
Yeah,
is that what we're doing?
11. No one's going to expect it. It'll be huge.
Right. Right. All right. There's an idea then. Okay. A quick break. Steve with the news and then a whole bunch more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
In this dirty old part of the city where the sun refused to shine.
You know this song?
I do know this song.
Eric Burdon with the Animals. We got to get out of this place. It's regarded by many soldiers in the Vietnam era as their... I just lost my computer's acting crazy. It's regarded by most Vietnam vets as our We Shall Overcome type of song.
I can't even begin to guess how many movies about Vietnam use that in their soundtrack, and it always worked. Anytime I ever saw it in a Vietnam movie, that song just made sense.
There's a bunch of songs, and we were trying to find some Veterans Day songs, and it's not just Vietnam vets, but it seems like that's where most of the songs focused.
Right.
Because that was the time.
The era was perfect for it, yeah.
Country Joe and the Fish, Feel Like I'm Fixin' to Die Rag. You'd know that if you heard it.
I think I might need to hear it. Yeah, I'm not sure how that goes exactly.
Don't give a damn about Vietnam.
Oh, of course.
Or it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for?
Yeah, I know that song.
Leaving on a Jet Plane by Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, it's interesting. I've heard the song 1,000 times. I never equated it with
either.
War. Huh. John Denver had a big hit with that also.
Yeah, Leaving on a Jet Plane, Peter, Paul, and Mary. There was a welcome home event at Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin in 2010. Overwhelmed by the response it received, especially by spouses of Vietnam vets. They sang along with tears in their eyes because they were the ones saying goodbye to the men who were boarding the planes for Vietnam.
Why did I never put it together?
I didn't either.
Interesting. All right.
Purple Haze, Jimi Hendrix.
Sure.
That's in a lot of movies.
Yep.
Fortunate Son by CCR, John Fogerty's Creedence Clearwater Revival. Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, Otis Redding.
Right.
And
I have to admit again, heard the song 1,000 times, never figured out that it had anything to do with war at all. Did you? I just thought it was about loneliness.
Yeah, it says it expressed feelings of yearning and loneliness. The lonely wanderer resting by the ocean, watching the sun go down.
I never put any war connection to it whatsoever. But now that I know that, I guess it makes more sense.
I didn't connect this either. The letter by the box tops.
Me neither.
Mail call was a sacred ritual in Vietnam, and this song captured its importance lyrically and musically.
Give me a
ticket for an airplane.
Yeah. I just thought it was about a couple who missed each other, and somehow the letter meant come and find me. Let's reunite. I never put it together with war.
Chain of Fools, Aretha Franklin.
Love
chain,
the song.
Chain. And Green Green Grass of
Oh yeah, that
home
one. Yeah, sure.
By Porter Wagoner.
Right, right.
All right, well,
but you're right, though. Most of them, when you think about it, the classic war songs, and maybe it's because we weren't around much for World War I or World War II, because I mentioned some to you, like When Johnny Comes Marching Home. There seemed to be a huge gap, but then during the Vietnam era, we were bombarded with them. They were everywhere because it was such a time of protest, and what better way to protest than write a song like that? So it made sense, I guess.
And yeah, a lot of people, John Denver, Leaving on a Jet Plane, did he write it?
I don't think he wrote it. I want to say I don't like to use my computer. My computer and I are not speaking. I want to say it was Bill Danoff who might have written it.
Who's that? Guy you went to school with?
No, there was this couple, Bill and Taffy Danoff, that wrote a lot of the songs that like John Denver did. The songs of the era, they were pretty pretty important songwriters back in the 70s.
I don't know who wrote it.
Doesn't say.
So kiss me and smile for me. Tell me that you'll wait for me.
Hold me like you'll never let me go because I'm leaving on a jet plane. I remember that song. That was a great song.
So who is saying that these are Vietnam songs, Wendy?
This is Top 10 Veterans Day songs, according to a website that I can't get back to because my computer is frozen.
Oh.
Okay, because I'm looking up the green grass of home in 1964.
Didn't Eddie Arnold also have a hit with that?
Yeah.
That's the one that seems to resonate the most with me.
And the Fleshtones covered it later on.
They did.
It had to do with a condemned prisoner who longs to escape to the green grass of
home. Oh. Oh.
Blowing in the Wind, Give Peace a Chance, Where Have All the Flowers Gone.
Oh, all those are good.
These are top 10 Veterans Day songs, according to TheNation.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I can't get back to the text, here we go. Run Through the Jungle, CCR, definitely about Vietnam. Look up songs for Armistice Day.
we'll have to add a second server. There's just too many of them, too many great ones.
And Last Train to Clarksville, Billy Joel's Goodnight Saigon, awesome song about the Vietnam War.
That's great.
Leaving
on a Jet Plane, by the way, was written by John Denver.
All right. Well, there you have it. All right. We have to talk to Jeff. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
Oh, going really good. Enjoy your show. Enjoy you guys.
Thank you, sir.
I was in Vietnam in 68, 69.
Thank you.
And I was in the Marine Corps up near the DMZ. And a lot of the times we listen to Armed Forces Radio, and all the songs you're talking about, I consider them Vietnam-era songs, but in Vietnam, we never heard those songs.
Really? Because why?
Radio and Armed Forces Radio, they censored the songs.
Really?
You know, so I know these songs from the movies, but not from Vietnam.
So when you were there, all these songs that we're mentioning that we all consider to be classics, you didn't hear any of those when you were there?
The way we heard them was like the people back home would send us 45s or they sent us cassettes.
Yeah.
You know, 45s are real popular. We got Beatles on 45s. Armed Forces Radio, when that Robin Williams thing.
Adrian Cronauer.
I don't remember that particular group of songs that much. You know, there was some soul music and stuff like that. But, you know, when they start playing them and they say, you know, I only associate them with the movies. I don't associate them with Vietnam.
That's strange. Wow. I had no idea.
And then weird songs that the USO shows would come through with.
Yeah.
Like, I think every show I saw, they always played I Am a Lineman for the County.
Really?
Oh, my God.
That was Glenn Campbell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going, why are they playing that song? You know?
That is peculiar. I don't know why.
Yeah, and it was always sung by these little Filipinos. Or Koreans or whatever.
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, Jeff, thank you for your service. We salute you today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just want to say this Veterans Day is a little bit better for me than all the other ones.
How come? Is there a reason for that?
I think that there's more people talking about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, deservedly so.
It's more positive, let me say that.
Well, we thank you for your service. We really do, Jeff.
Yeah, take care. Thank you.
All right, you too. Well, don't you like hearing that? I mean, I know that it was a very tumultuous time for anybody who served over there because of the country's attitudes, and I get that. But I like hearing what Jeff just said, that this has been a better year Maybe some understanding is finally washing through, maybe.
Well, those songs were a veteran's playlist, top 10 songs of Vietnam for this one soldier. Every soldier has their own soundtrack. And there are ways... I never know what to do and how to thank a veteran. I did go to one of those honor flights when my girlfriend Sue's dad went on the flight.
Yeah.
And I brought the boys to meet Mr. Mexto at Midway Airport. And it was, if you've never done it, at least do it once. It is the most touching experience I've ever shared with my sons and my husband.
Oh, nice.
Just to see these men and women get off the flight. And it was a very, very busy day for them. They have to be at Midway very early in the morning. And then they go to Washington, D.C. and see all the monuments and, yeah. and all the memorials. And then they fly home and they've put in a full day, but they are just sitting there smiling. And they come up to you and say, oh, thank you for coming out. And it's like, don't thank us.
Right.
Thank you.
Right.
It was really, I got goosebumps thinking about it. It was really a beautiful moment. So we have some ways to thank a veteran and some phone calls to get to 312-981-7200. It's Veterans Day, and it's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. We were talking about the songs that define the soundtrack of Vietnam Vets. This is one of them. A brand new book that's out that I just found, actually. Doug Bradley and Craig Warner. It's called We Gotta Get Out of This Place. And what they did is... it's the soundtrack of the Vietnam War, shows how music helped soldiers and veterans connect to each other and to life back home to cope with the complexities of the war they had been sent to fight. They interviewed a bunch of men and women for this We Gotta Get Out of This Place, and they had never talked about their Vietnam War experience before, even with their spouses and family members, but they would talk about songs.
Oh, yeah.
And how they got through it. These Boots Are Made for Walking. Nancy Sinatra was one of it. My Girl... Ring of Fire, just all these songs that we had talked about. Green, Green Grass of Home. This is how it helped them get back into real life.
Oh, good.
So we got to get that book and interview the author. That's pretty cool. How to thank a veteran. Some things you could do today when you see someone. Not always are they dressed in military garb in their uniform. If they are and you're out to dinner or lunch today, offer to buy their lunch.
That would be a nice gesture.
It really would.
And I know there's tons of restaurants today that are offering free food to vets, which is a very admirable thing.
Yeah, and I don't know. We have to find out a link to find out all the... We'll Google it and tell it later. Yeah. Tell you guys later. Also, just say thank you for your service. That's appreciated. Can I tell you some things? This, according to the Red Eye, written by Rianne Cole today. Inappropriate questions and gestures... If you run into a veteran, you're curious, you want to ask questions, and it's okay to say something like, why'd you join the military?
Yeah.
But it's not okay to say, have you ever killed anyone? How many people have you killed? They're wildly inappropriate.
I think, over the years I've interviewed vets, and the question always comes up, did you see any action? And I think that's the polite way. I would never ask, did you kill anybody? But I am curious, what their experience was like. And I think that question is kind of the right one, isn't it? Is that too harsh of a question? Did you see any action when you were serving?
I guess. I don't know how to phrase it properly.
I don't either.
Like, boy, I can't imagine what it was like.
Yeah.
And maybe that's open-ended enough for them to say, no, you can't, because
right.
Here's what happened.
I've never had anybody reject the question, it usually, because I mean it sincerely, I'm
yeah.
curious about what exactly their experience was, so.
It's so amazing to me when you talk to a veteran, and we will be later on this afternoon, it's just to hear it from their views.
Yeah.
Because we're not a military family, so I don't know what to expect.
Right.
And I didn't pay attention that much in history in high school, and I'm mad at myself about that. You think it was, back then I thought, oh, that's old news. We're never going to be involved in wars again. Boy, was I wrong.
It also is shocking, and as your boys get a little bit older and are of the age of the kids that were drafted, that throws you. I mean, I sometimes meet my daughter's friends, and I say to myself that they would be of the age if this was a slightly different time where they'd be leaving. They'd be going overseas right now, and they just seem so unbelievably young to me.
Oh, my God. I can't even think of that.
Yeah.
All right. Real quickly, before we take a break and get to news, we were talking about a lot of the songs that represented the Vietnam War, but the other wars didn't really have a big soundtrack. Tom, what about World War One? How did they put together things and remember that war?
Oh, yeah. Bill and Wendy, I love you for doing what you're doing today.
Oh, thank you, Tom.
And to add to the... to the songs, there are two poems that were written in World War One that was called the Dead Poets War, because so many young men from Germany and from Britain were killed in the trenches, and they wrote wonderful poetry. There are two that can be easily found on Google. In Flanders Fields, the poppies grow. That's why the veterans give you a free poppy when you donate.
I wondered that. Yeah. I really did.
And the other is I Have a Rendezvous with Death. And it was just such a horrible war in the trenches. And the origin, of course, of Veterans Day was Armistice Day, the day after World War One.
Yeah.
And that's what I've been doing. I always on Veterans Day, I get up at 5 and I go to all the bars and I pass these poems out. And those two poems will rip your heart out. They will.
We'll find them.
Everybody recognizes that. It's just a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you. We'll look those up, and we'll put a link to them on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
Please do.
And you're a veteran, I'm guessing, as well, right, Tom?
No,
you're not.
I was in the lottery back in the 70s.
Yeah.
I was in the lottery.
And your number was not called.
No, I was way high.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but... God, thanks for what you're doing, and again, love you for it.
Oh, I appreciate it, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much.
You have to celebrate the veterans today, and we will be talking with a woman veteran, who I believe was also a basketball star.
Mm-hmm.
So we will talk to her later on, and if you've served in any of the services or any of the wars, we thank you so much today.
We'll get some news done. Steve with the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder, along with Hannah and Dane from Flavor HD. If you like your food and you like your websites, it's the perfect combination of both. Hi, guys.
If you like your oddly placed enthusiasm, look to us.
Right.
Oddly placed.
The king and queen of oddly placed
the
enthusiasm.
Pipers of enthusiasm right here.
Wendy and I were talking about this on Monday. My wife and I ate at a restaurant over the weekend that was an interesting concept to me, and I don't know if this is commonplace. It's a seafood restaurant that had no plates, no silverware of any kind. The napkins aplenty because you need them. What you would do is you would order the type of seafood you wanted. They had 8 or 9 choices of different kind of seafood, everything from crawfish to shrimp to lobster to scallops, on and on and on and on. Then you would pick the type of spices you wanted. Then you would pick any side dishes. And what they would do is they would boil it all up in a bag.
Yeah.
And then you would dump it out on the
table.
And
you've never done this before?
I've never heard of this
before. It's called a boil, where not the verb to boil, but a boil.
An experience.
Yeah. And what they do is they kind of put all of what you want into a bag.
Right.
And they boil it.
Yeah.
Including a spice bag.
I mean, I get that, the combination of ingredients, and that's really popular, but the whole no plate thing, did they tie your hands behind your back too?
They didn't tie our hands behind our backs, but I'm a
bobbing
person...
for shrimp boil.
Bobbing for corn. Yeah.
I like the restaurant experience to be somewhat neater than that one was. The food was extremely tasty, but it was, I mean, really, you needed to take a shower the second you were halfway through your meal. It was just so...
You kind of, they want you to definitely to immerse yourself in it. I mean, was butter, where was the butter?
On your face.
There was... Right. It was everywhere.
No, but I mean, you don't boil it in butter, right? So where did they apply it for you? Was it on the table for you to apply to the corn and dipping?
I don't don't remember there being butter. The only thing that was separate, like we ordered hush puppies and we ordered sweet potato fries.
those
were not
up
in
if
the
you
bag
boil them with the corn and the potatoes.
No,
and yeah. You don't need silverware for those.
No,
you don't need silverware for those
or the corn.
But I said to Terry, I said, you know, the next time we ordered from here, I would like to just pick it up and then bring it home and have it in the privacy of my own home with plates and knives and forks and spoons and ladles and
it's
stuff.
It's proper. There's yeah. decorum. Now, but okay, so it was just the two of you guys?
Yeah.
All right.
It would have been hard to eat there. Like, we were going to, there was another couple that
we were.
What
were the other couples doing? Did you, because sometimes I'll defer.
Oh,
and like,
it was a mess.
What are they doing?
Right. It was,
there's a lot of slathering.
It looked like a scene from Walking Dead all over, everywhere you'd look. And I don't know that I'd want to eat there with people
all right,
that
so
I didn't.
So let's break this down. What exactly did you have within your boil? Was it crawfish?
I just had garlic shrimp. And you got a lot. I mean, it was a pound of garlic shrimp, and it was tasty, mm-hmm. but it
Why
was
do you need a fork?
So messy. Because they were served, the shrimp were served with the heads on.
So you rip them off.
Yeah, you tear them in the, like,
yeah.
come on.
That I mean, seems so barbaric.
It's a little, it's sort of medieval times, but it's more just like Nolan's time.
That's what otters do. That's why I like, I mean, when you eat crab legs, I actually get into.
I love the cracking of the crab leg. I really, really get annoyed when they've sawed the leg
do
for
you?
Me.
It's so much easier,
no,
though.
No, dude,
it's fun.
I have stress and I get to work it out.
And your hands get all buttery and greasy, so you just use your hands to eat the potatoes and the corn anyway.
I guess.
Or you can bring a Swiss Army knife with the utensils and leave it in your pocket at all times.
There's that. All right. Next
so
time.
How did they bust the tables? Did you watch? I mean, do they just dump it? How, did, how
they
well
put
do they clean
this
the
giant
table?
With a sheet of like brown paper over
like
the table?
Paper.
Okay, yeah. Your own paper.
And then they gave us, I told Wendy this already, as we walked in, they gave us lobster bibs. And I go, you know what? I don't need that. I'm not having lobster. And he goes, oh, you're going to want it. And I go, no, I would love to have the lobster, but I was really,
like
and he goes, it
Gallagher
doesn't matter.
Show.
It was like a Gallagher show. Please put this on. But in reality, a lobster bib was nice, but I could have used a raincoat or something.
Well, now you know.
Yeah, for next time I would do a raincoat.
But really, at what point would you have thought utensils would work here?
The
aside
whole time.
From just,
right away.
Immediately. Aside from just normally having them,
yeah.
why did you think... Okay, so you didn't have crab, you had shrimp.
I had shrimp.
Did you have crawfish?
We did not.
Okay, because you don't use utensils for those.
Right.
Wendy and I don't use utensils for crab.
Right. I just like to have it if I need it.
Here.
It's always nice to have a fork if you need
it. But could you have asked?
Yeah, I did ask
oh, okay.
and was
and they
laughed
said
at.
No.
We don't have silverware here, sir.
There were no,
silverware
in
at all.
New Orleans times, therefore there is none here.
I guess not.
It's medieval
What's
New Orleans
the restaurant
times?
Called?
It was called Boilers Fish and Boilers Shrimp and Crawfish. It's on Dempster.
Slash
either,
no forks.
It was right. BYOF.
Fork you.
Right. That was the name of it.
I like that. Yeah, I'd go to that.
Right. I would attend that anytime. So a pleasant. Honestly, it was an interesting experience, and the food was outstanding. But boy, is it messy.
Well, I will say it is in fact very, very southern. It's more along the Gulf Coast.
Yeah.
But what they do is they take what they either have or what they've caught,
yeah.
and they throw it into a bag, and then they just throw it in the boiling water until it all cooks up together, including corn, potatoes, whatever, and then you just kind of throw it in a bowl and go for it.
Now. Sometimes, you know, did you look to any of your neighbors?
Like, I did.
And it's like, hey, buddy, wouldn't a fork be great? And
right.
Like, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Everyone in the restaurant, most of us in the restaurant had that look. And like I said, everybody had their own napkin dispenser because the ratio of napkins to shrimp was an exact 1-to-1. Every time you had a shrimp, you needed a new napkin.
And anytime there's maybe some unknowns or things that people aren't used to, did they have maybe the you know, host come up front and say, like, here's what we're doing. Here at so-and-so's,
the
we
owner,
never use forks.
The owner is a man named Chris who was incredibly nice, who came over and explained the concept to us.
Okay,
he was very welcoming. And he was the one I said, how about a knife or a fork? And he goes, no, we don't. Wait, please,
you'll
sir.
Thank me later.
Come
we'll
on.
We are BYOS, bring your own silverware.
That's nice. How it was.
Per yeah. a texter.
That's how it was. Years ago in Florida, my family used to eat at a place, and the name of it escapes me, but it was a crab house. And they had mallets, and everybody. And again, there you could get a fork or a knife if you wanted one, but it was like a game to bust it up, and you would get hit with shells from
whack-a-crab.
Tables.
Whack-a-crab.
It was whack-a-crab. That was the name of the restaurant.
Joe's
it was
Crab Shack has that to yeah. this day where it's just like a boil, but it's in a tray.
Right.
And they have the mallets.
But you'd get hit. Like, there'd be people sitting across the hall from you, and you'd get a piece of crab. Like, sorry. You get that all the time.
That's a bonus piece because it's very
yeah,
expensive.
Right. That's mine now.
Yeah, I don't. So if you had ordered crab, would it have, in fact, come with a cracker? I don't mind the crab cracker.
I'm not sure.
I use that little
the fork knife thing. Yeah, that's a good one.
Because that you
the real small one.
Yeah, you just rip the shell and then pull.
Here's the thing too. If you want to do this at home, it's not that expensive.
And, really?
But I do recommend the forks, the tiny forks, and you've got to have at least one cracker.
Yeah. What's not expensive?
Doing a crab dinner,
because you're just getting raw shrimp or crab or whatever you're getting.
Yeah,
it's expensive.
But it's not as expensive as going out for it.
Oh, and it's easy
because you just have to steam it.
And the grocery stores have pretty regular sales on crab.
Yeah,
and on
shrimp. Can get it at Costco.
Oh, can you?
And
it's
Sam's,
pre-cooked, right? And then you steam it.
I steam it. Anyway,
you
got to
buy 10,000 at a time, though, don't you?
Yeah, no, you can buy it by the pound.
No, 8,000, 9,000.
I want to buy it by the truckload.
I need a pallet of shrimp.
Very, very good. I do it based on color. So you steam it, and then when it gets to that like really, really vibrant red, that's when I pull it. It's great.
All right.
It really doesn't take that long at all.
Yeah.
And it's a lot less money. It's less than going out for it.
You're like the anti-deadliest catch.
No, I will tell you, ever since I watched that program, I have never once complained about the amount that I have paid for crab.
Right.
Ever.
Because lives could be lost to get
the lives are lost. It's not even a can.
Shrimp.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And that's not even including the crab lives.
Right. Yeah. It's even worse. All right, a quick break and then more with Hannah and Dane of Flavor HD. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Hannah and Dane are here from Flavor HD. Every Wednesday we talk about the world of food. The sweet show, it's a baking and sweet show this time around. Is that what it is?
Great American Baking and Sweets Show. No, it's not Sweets Show.
The American
it's a
Baking and Sweets Show.
It is. I was
That's
right.
What
okay,
it is.
Great.
And also in America.
America.
I'm glad we're doing it here in America. I know there was talk
of doing
it. It's
not only here in America, it's here in Rosemont.
Oh, even better. Because they talked about doing it in Bulgaria, and everyone's like, I don't think that's going to work.
Well, it's just a very different lot. I mean, I don't know.
You don't want to get into it.
Pastries are just different.
Right.
They talked about doing it in Rosemont, but it's actually in Schaumburg.
Oh, it is?
No, which a lot of people confuse.
It's a push.
People can, this is for the public, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll do the sweet shows, like the one at McCormick Place is not for the public, but this one, the public is invited.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Can we start the taunting that we get to go to the sweet show now, or no? We have to wait on
We're
that?
Still a couple months away.
Okay, just checking.
I feel guilty about that.
Right there, public. No.
For a 30-second aside, I don't anymore. I used to, and now I don't because it's not the way it used to be. It's not like we walk out with duffel bags of candy.
Right.
Oh, I brought home a lot of candy.
I came home with like 3 pieces last year.
Oh,
why?
That's what I tell the kids.
Oh, gotcha.
No. I really
the bag
didn't.
Has gotten smaller
much.
In like the spirit of fun size. Yeah. You know how it was...
my purse has gotten bigger though.
if you plan it right, you get multiple trips. I mean, for those who plan, I'm not a planner.
Right.
But back to this is in fact open to the public.
All right,
and it's this weekend.
What do people need to know?
For
what are
the
they
event that
say?
Actually exists,
right?
The
right.
American Baking and Sweet Show, November 13th through the 15th. That's coming up this weekend, 2015, at the Renaissance Schaumburg Convention Center. So you drive by, you wonder, what are they doing with that? Well, they're doing this with that.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to have not only baking, but also sweets and candy, coffee, liqueurs. It's going to have a lot of hardware out there for those baking enthusiasts that need the special tool to make it all work. And there's going to be some great celebrities that are going to be there, including our buddy Duff is going to be out there.
Duff Gold and Ace of Cakes.
Excellent. All right, good. And, Dane, you have more?
And we have 2 pairs of tickets for it for winners.
2 pairs?
Yes, 2 pairs.
Holy wow, we are so generous.
Yeah. You're very
Holy
generous.
Wow.
And, Hannah, please, watch the language. Come on.
Thank you.
Some kids are home from school today with the Holy Wow.
Yeah, right, because of Veterans Day.
Right.
The way to win is like the first 2 callers that can name, because we've kind of thrown out some smoke signals right here and some kind of diversionary tactics on the words, is you just have to name the city that it's taking place in, the first 2 that do that.
All right.
We'll win the pairs of tickets for it. And
Kevin,
gonna...
do you know the... Because Kevin's answering the phones.
Kevin's confused.
And they're each going to win a book, one of Duff's brand new books, Duff Bakes.
All right. I will go whisper the answer to Kevin so he knows. But call us right now at 312-981-7200. And did you say the first 2 who know the city that it's taking place in? Is that
each,
what you said?
Each of the... the first one gets a pair and the second one gets a pair.
So they can go with people that they at least agree to go with, you know, or you could choose a friend or put it on eBay.
Well, it's hard to go solo. You and I've been we've gotten separated at the Sweets and Snack show before. And then when we find each other, we're like, oh yeah. And it looks like a deodorant commercial where we've gone and hugged. It's nice.
We're blocked by like the Twinkie the Kid guy.
It's terrible.
We shove aside the Hello Kitty.
People are calling in now for those tickets. Now there's also a big, something going on
tomorrow night.
Giada De Laurentiis.
Yeah,
what is this?
Whoever said Chicago Chicago wasn't the epicenter of the food magnetism, right? We're drawing in all of the great events and certainly some of the smallest but very talented members of food celebrity.
Louis Pequeno.
Yeah, she's that means small in Spanish.
Right, and very small.
Yeah.
Even though she's Italian.
Isn't she Italian?
Yes.
Well, but Pequeno is Spanish, right? But yeah. Probably not far off from the Italian small.
Right.
Right.
Hannah was making it global. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Hannah.
Do what I can.
So Giada, although she travels the globe, she will be in Naperville, of all places, right? And it's an evening with Giada Thursday. That's tomorrow, November 12th, at Pfeiffer Hall in Naperville. I have two pairs of tickets for that. Each pair gets a book. So you'll have to like look on with your neighbor, I guess, on the book side. Mm-hmm. So we have two pairs of that. And then it's at Pfeiffer Hall out in Naperville at 7:30 tomorrow night. And in order to win that, let's think of like what would be a nice collective thing. Maybe the first two people who can name Giada's, like how tall she is, maybe, perhaps?
No.
Well, because you have not divulged that, so it would be almost impossible for someone to know that.
As a side note, Pfeiffer Hall is on the campus of North Central College. So it's actually, I believe it's put on by Anderson's Books, but they work in conjunction with North Central College right there in Naperville.
All right. Very, very good. So we need to figure out a way to give those tickets.
Just give it to caller, I don't know. Let's just like Kevin.
Let's not spend
randomly.
A lot of time on this.
Caller five. So, caller and six.
Five and six at 312-981-7200. We will announce the winners to your previous contest in just a little bit. Kevin's getting all that information.
Yeah.
But now call again. You have another chance to win.
If you didn't win that.
Right.
Perhaps we should have separated the two giveaways.
No, but they were separated by 9 seconds. That's plenty of time.
And about 40 miles and totally different places and days.
Look at Kevin's twitching in the producer's booth. He can't even keep
He's
still.
He's in a reverse fetal position.
312-981-7200. I think we said callers 5 and 6.
Yeah, 5 and 6. That sounds good.
5 and 6. 312-981-7200. Dial that up right now. We didn't have time to talk about this, but maybe this can come up next time you guys are on. Mm-hmm. There's been some strange goings on at Chipotle.
Yeah.
But they hope to get things back in order.
Well, Chipotle took a very interesting stance, which is they closed their locations in Oregon and Seattle. All of them, which is, I don't know, 40-some stores, because there was an E. coli outbreak.
Yeah.
And they were...
Wait, Wendy,
I went to Chipotle.
That's one of the after effects. But it was an interesting position where they were like, we don't know where this is coming from, and we don't want anybody else to get sick. We're done.
Yeah.
Until now, they're reopening. They have not located the source. But it was a very interesting position where they really took their customers' health into
They
into
lost a lot of money
they
closing.
They lost a lot of money. And I have not been able to figure out if they've paid their employees, because that's a lot of money out of their employees' pockets as well. But it really did allow people to feel that they cared about their customer base, because they didn't want them to get sick.
I ate at Chipotle that exact day that
did
everything
really?
Came out.
Yeah.
So,
but it wasn't here. But they couldn't, because they couldn't figure it out, and those stores have all the same vendors, they were just like, we're done. We don't want people. We don't. How bad is this going to get? Just shut it up. Shut it down.
There was a big E. coli issue with cilantro a couple of years ago, and they put
Actually,
cilantro in. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, there was another one. Yeah, food recalls are interesting because of the factorization of food. And I mean, if it's one thing, then it hits everybody.
Can I have, we're going to go to Kevin right now in the producer's booth. Kevin, who are the winners of the two contests that Hannah and Dane have just...
Sandy Stillwell and Diane Rapala were our first two winners.
Yay, Sandy and Diane.
Nice. And then callers 5 and 6 were Jim Reed and Jim Turner.
The gyms.
Yay, the gyms.
The two gyms have finally won. All right, well...
what did they win?
I find it interesting that the gyms were the winners for Giada.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, and she's got a brand new book, Happy Cooking. You know those gyms love happiness.
I'm sure that's why they were calling. That's why they were calling.
Hannah, thank you. Dane, thank you. Visit their website. It's flavorhd.com. It's right there on your internet. Appreciate it, guys. Have a good week.
All right, you too.
Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Everybody is cheer dancing in the
we
studio
can't
right
help
now.
Ourselves from dancing, Wendy.
Let's
it's
do
impossible.
It.
Let's dance, fellas.
Bill, I got to turn you on to a couple of guys, two out of the four guys. My son, Dylan, is going to be 13. My other son, Michael's 16. And they watch this show on True TV all the time. And they said, Mom, Dad, you got to watch it with us. And I said, what is it about? Oh, these crazy guys, they play practical jokes on people and they do it for points. And mm-hmm. I said, is it going to make me uncomfortable? Because I can't watch Cops. That mm-hmm. makes me uncomfortable. But I am not uncomfortable with impractical jokers. In the studio with us right now, Joe Gatto and James Murray.
Hey,
guys. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. Very well. Great. Thanks for having us.
Great to meet you.
Likewise.
This show is hysterically funny, very uncomfortable at times, but not in a way that you cringe. It's such a good family show.
That's so cool that we love hearing when kids turn their parents onto it and families watch it together. We get that a lot where there'll be generations, like grandmothers will watch it with their kids yeah. and grandkids. It's crazy that everybody watches it together.
You're probably not old enough, but I'm sure you'll get the reference. There was a show on for many, many years called Candid Camera.
Yeah, of course.
So you do know. Sure. And Durwood Kirby. Mm-hmm. So the roots of what you do are probably based on that to some extent, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's similar in a way in that we are playing jokes, but I think the spin on our show is that the jokes are on us.
Oh.
You know, so that we kind of took a prank show and spun it upside down, so yeah. we're the butt of the jokes, not the public, which I think is what you were saying.
Yeah.
Like, some people get uncomfortable watching prank shows. Our show, they just like watching us torture each other.
Yeah, we're just being mean to our own friends, so yeah. you have a license to do that.
Sure, why
and
not?
You guys have been friends for how long?
26 years.
How
we
about
met
that?
Freshman year of high school,
1990.
Yeah. All four of you at the same time.
Same year.
Yeah. yeah.
Oh, and did you ever think you would have a show and selling out shows like tonight at the Rosemont Theater? Did you ever envision this?
We knew exactly freshman year high
school. Freshman year,
exactly
we
in religion class. We're like, yes. this is going to be our.
I was like, let me copy your math homework. Also, in 2016, you and I are going to take over the comedic world. No, we were happy to get episode two of the show.
And how many seasons now are you working on?
We are filming our fifth season.
Oh, great!
We hit our 100th yeah. episode about 2 months ago.
So, yeah. what did you guys do to convince True TV that you would provide them with a good show? What was that?
A lot
like?
Of bribery.
Is there bribery?
Yeah, a lot of just
we knew
promise.
Who to sleep with. Let me tell you.
No, it was mostly like the person that we sold it to really saw what the magic of our show that people like is that we're truly friends. We're not cast
you
as
can
friends.
Tell.
That's it. So it comes right through, and it's really about a show about friendship, and that's what everybody really connects with.
Yep.
So I think that's really what helped it. It was unlike anything they had seen, she told
yeah.
us, and she was like, you know, we'd love to have you here. And we said, okay, we'll be on TV.
We had tried a few times before yeah. to get a TV show. We sold a sketch comedy show with us in it to Spike TV, shot a pilot, didn't go to series. We yeah. sold an improv comedy show to A&E, shot a pilot, didn't go to series. So a lot of what it is finding the right format and yep. the right cast. And we put those two things together, and, you know, Three Times Was a Charm with Jokers.
Yeah, and this embarrassment comedy is, like, really how we made each other laugh in our life. There's no acting. This is how we do it. Like, if we ever got in an elevator together, cameras or not, we're making something up to make the other guy feel uncomfortable, so.
And that's, you know, because the kids that do turn you on to it. By the way, I have to read this text. We said we were having you guys on, and we got this a while ago from 224. Wendy and Bill, my family have to be the Jokers' biggest fans here in Chicago. We've watched them as a group since the first show. Please give them our best and thank them for some of the best laughs we've had together in our family room. From Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. You're welcome. We're coming over for dinner tonight.
Yes.
I'm thinking, Bill, you play tennis, and there's a really great bit where you guys are going up against these tennis pros.
Yeah, we pretended to be, like a lot of our show is we pretend to be a professional in something.
Oh, nice.
I was
so
crying.
We were nice. Teaching tennis classes out in Long Island, so there was these people showing up for tennis, and we were like talking about our history of who we were, and none of us are in shape or no. I think Sal and I, neither Sal nor I that day had swung a tennis racket ever in our life.
Yeah.
So now we have to be tennis pros, and they made me some Belgian champion. Remember?
You guys were Australia. He was ranked number 382 in Australia. It's like, so you're nothing.
Impressive.
But he's having them do moves and stuff. Yeah. And people are looking at you like, are you serious? No, you do it this way.
Yeah.
It was just so stupidly funny.
Yeah. What does not make the air? My guess is something has happened along the way that you think to yourself, this is so funny, but we can't sadly put this on TV. What has not made the
trick to the show really is like there's a whole procedure to release somebody so they say they agree to be on the show.
Yeah.
So we tell them after the prank has happened. So you don't tell them before because you don't want them in on the joke.
Right.
And you want their genuine reaction. So sometimes people won't sign, and we've had... Unfortunately, there's been some great stuff.
Yeah, the one that I think of is we were working at a supermarket, and Sal was behind the counter ringing customers up. And this woman comes. She's going to pay for her groceries, so she takes out her credit card. So I said to Sal, Sal, nonchalantly, take out your cell phone and snap a photo of her credit card before you swipe it.
And you have like a two-way thing. Like
yeah,
you're talking
he can hear what
in
I'm saying. Yeah.
his ear. So yeah. if you've never seen the show, yeah. you're getting orders or
yeah. commands from, yeah.
Yes, from your friends.
Yeah, yeah, commanding you what to do.
Right.
So Sal does it, and go figure, people don't respond well when you try to steal their identity. She went ballistic and called 911 on us. The cops came.
Oh, nice.
Thankfully, they were fans of the show and wanted photos with us.
Yeah, so it was great. Worked out. But you'll never see that because she was like, I'm not going to be on your show.
Yeah. And they never like when you do these pranks, people out in the public, they never recognize
well,
you?
Well, New York City is a great ally in that because there's just, you know, there's 8 million people. So if yeah. half of the people don't recognize us, that's 4 million people that we could get. Oh, you know? So some people will see us and we'll just, if they know us, we just shuffle them along.
Also, yeah. Bill, we're very average looking guys.
Yeah, we're forgettable.
Oh. You know?
Can I show them a pic? You, all right. Murray, you look... Murr, you look just like my doctor. Now, he's not my gynecologist.
I was about to say,
because that would be weird. But I will show you a picture of my doctor, and every time I go see him, we'll show it to you during the break.
Oh, I see it.
It's so weird. So I watch you. I'm like, there's Dr. Rudy. Yes. And so then when I go into him and I have to take my shirt SMB. Off,
very
I feel
man.
Kind of weird.
Yeah. Well, here's the joke. I am your doctor. This whole time,
God,
this has been a very long
prank
on you.
This forever.
Yeah. Boy,
you
I'm guys not are signing good. Off on this one. We are talking to Joe Gatto and James Murray Thursdays at 9 Central on True TV. You can watch Impractical Jokers. You can also see them tonight, Rosemont Theater, 7 p.m. You can get your tickets at Ticketmaster.com and sit tight because we will come back. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. You guys are like 10 years old. I didn't have their mics
you
on.
Punks.
You punks. You read the whole punks. Commercial. Joe's just going.
I didn't have your mics on.
I know,
but
I just tried watching.
You are the embodiment of evil, you kids.
I would never be able to do that in a million years.
Impractical Jokers.
I've written your names down. How do you like that? Your
man,
names are written down.
Class.
Now you're in trouble.
All cool. right. Where is Sal and where is Q?
We don't know. So if anyone sees, please saying. Call the station as soon as you can.
All four of you tonight in action, Rosemont Theater, the Where's Larry tour. Mm-hmm. What can we expect?
The live show is it's a stand-up comedy show. All four of us are on stage. It's like a big theater show. And there's a giant screen behind us where we show hidden camera challenges you can't see on TV.
Oh.
We film just for the live show.
Exclusive.
It's a lot of us telling stories from the show, from our lives. It's our friendship on display, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it in color?
It is in color.
It's in Technicolor. Yeah, oh, coming yes. to you live.
Yes. People love color.
It's a talkie, too.
It's a talkie.
Oh, it is. Wow.
Actually, the whole thing is silent. We have somebody up front that just holds up all the cards.
I think that's what's kind of so charming about your whole Impractical Joker show on True TV is you guys are friends, so no holds barred. You guys are not always lovely to one another,
no,
but
no.
you're genuine.
Yeah, but the thing that people that we like to about the live show, especially, is that when we get out there to meet the fans, or even on the streets and stuff, when you get to meet the fans, people feel like they know you, which is it's a lot of fun. You know, we're excited to be with the people on the show, so it's like a
yeah.
genuine excitement when you get to meet fans of the show and get to hang out with them.
Yeah,
you know?
Like we're doing this is a cross-country bus tour we're
yeah.
in the middle of right now, right? And when we film the TV show, it's a hidden camera show. We never get to see how
yeah.
it affects people.
Oh, yeah.
You
yeah,
know, talk so to, and if somebody's a fan, it's like bad. You know what
right.
I mean? Like during when you're filming the show, it's like, get away. She can't say anything.
yeah.
But here, when you're out and you do this, the bus tour, and like we're doing a cruise. We're doing
that is crazy.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun.
We're doing an Impractical Jokers cruise in January. It goes from Miami to Cozumel.
January
and it's a
11th.
Week vacation.
Oh, wow.
In the Caribbean with fans.
Yeah, we're basically vacationing with fans. It's great.
See, that would scare me. I wouldn't trust you guys.
No, we're not filming anything. It's like part of the live
show. I still
tour
wouldn't
show.
Trust
you
guys.
Shouldn't.
Look at you guys in the studio when he's doing a live read.
The boat is called the Titanic 2.
Yeah, oh, you'll be
right.
fine.
It's the iceberg tour. It'll be so much fun.
They fixed all the problems with the first one.
Don't you trust us?
But people will expect.
I don't trust guys with
trust
matching
me.
Shirts.
You can trust me.
People
yeah.
will expect there to be something going on because of the nature of who you are. The
well,
whole trip, they
I mean,
won't
we
trust
have,
you.
The whole bill is packed with comedians. We have Gilbert Godfrey, Lisa Lampanelli, you know, people going down.
Michael Black,
yeah.
all sorts of.
Yeah,
you know who we have on the boat? David Zucker, who's from
the airplane.
Yeah. Naked Gun fame.
Yeah.
He's going to be doing a screening of one of his movies.
On the boat, yeah. So we have the Dan Band is going to be performing, the guys from the Hangover movies.
Really?
Yeah. So it's just a crazy
wow.
good time. It's a week of craziness with fans. And we're so excited to just be there and do it.
Oh, that's going to be nice.
Yeah.
Do the Impractical Jokers have a Pete Best? Was there a fifth guy that almost got into the group?
Well, there was a fourth guy that dropped out, and then Q jumped in.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, when we did live improv back in the day, this is a long time ago, Q would guest perform with us, and we had a fourth member.
Yeah.
And then he grew up too fast. See, that was his problem. He got married and had a kid.
He's still a close friend of ours who chose to have a wife and kid and a respectable job.
But does he feel a little like he's missing out a little bit? You guys?
No, we feel like we're missing out on the life he has a little.
Yeah,
he's doing what?
Bill, I still live alone. I have no prospects for ever getting married, no children. So you know,
he's doing all right.
Yeah. What I'm saying is, do you have anybody that's single?
We'll find you somebody
in Chicago. Call
10th caller, 312-981-7200.
Well, you better drop that down. Fifth caller.
Before they come to their senses.
Any caller.
Actually, the operator.
Take you on a date.
The operator. You just pick up the phone, press zero.
Please call.
He looks like my doctor, girls, you know?
I can play a doctor on TV. Dr. Rudy.
Where do you think this will go? Like, in 5 years, in 10 years, will you still be doing the show?
The graveyard.
I'll be gone.
Well, I'll be dead. Yeah.
You know, we're hoping to do a Joker's movie next year.
Next step.
That's the big next
step. We're working on that now, which is going to be so much fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cross country, like, take the live show. Take the TV show on the road and do challenges cross country.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Well, come through Chicago and come visit us again.
You got it. Great. Yeah, thanks so much.
Oh, go on, Mike.
No, go on.
Is there, I don't know who your influences were, because there's a Kids in the Hall element to you guys. You get that a little bit?
Yeah, we get that. Yeah, because the group dynamic, too. People put that together, Stella, you know, stuff like that. Yeah.
So, very much so.
You know, our influences are, you know, the Zucker Brothers, of course.
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks. Oh, yeah. You know, Eddie Murphy.
Is he? Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I mean, Kids in the Hall were our favorite group. You know, we used to go see them.
We
started the Tenderloins, we waited outside.
Carnegie
Hall. Was it Carnegie Hall?
Carnegie Hall, yeah.
To see they did a show, and we waited outside and we handed them our VHS tape of our sketch comedy.
Oh, did you?
And they were watching on the tour bus.
And we're like, we're going to make it now.
Yeah.
So funny. There's something funny about them. Wendy and I had Dave up from the group, from Kids in the Hall. And I asked the question, every improv group has a weak link. Who is yours? And before I finished the question, he goes, Kevin. It's one of the guys in the group. Then we had another guy, Scott Thompson from the group, and I asked him the same question. He goes, well, it would be Kevin. And then when we had Kevin up, I started to tell him the story, and he put his hand up. He's like, don't tell me the rest. Every guy says me, right? And it was true. Oh, isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
With us, we're 4 weak links.
Yeah, we're a weak chain.
We're equally weak.
We're a brittle chain of comedy.
We saw Julia from upstairs came down to get her picture taken with you. Jason from our production department came down. People love you. Everyone's texting. My husband and I love Impractical Jokers. Wish we were going to their show in Rosemont. There are people who said, please tell the Impractical Jokers that my son turned me on to their show.
Oh, that's great.
Very cool. And I love it.
Smart kid.
This might be for you, Murr. I am divorced, and my 10-year-old and 7-year-old all have cried from laughing. Thank you, guys.
All right. I see the subtle dropped in the divorce.
Yeah,
she's dropped in the divorce. You know, again, all you have to do is call and say, they'll hook you up with me.
Call her. No, actually, we'll go get
lunch at Panera. It'll be great.
We're going to call somebody at random and just hopefully. Actually, just come down to the corner of the Magnificent Mile.
Right. We'll find you. We'll get you going. The ultimate compliment is the multi-generational thing, that families can watch you guys and laugh together. The only show like that for us right now is SVU, is the only one we all watch together and laugh at. It's very rare.
Yeah, see, with my generation, it was To Catch a Predator.
Oh, right? Yeah.
My grandparents, my parents.
giggles.
Yeah, it was a hoot. Yeah. What a hoot.
Always funny. Yeah. Yep.
Never gets old.
Yeah, but see, a lot of people would not like that the kids and mom and dad are watching together. I think it's a really cool thing because
it is.
We as parents now are way cooler than our parents used to be.
That's how we grew up. I grew up watching comedy with my father and just and like that was like a bonding thing. So I think that to be able to give that back to people is what we really enjoy.
Yep.
Well, they love you. People love you, and you should go see them tonight. Last night was a sold-out show.
Yeah, tonight I think it's sold out, too. But who knows? Go on Ticketmaster. Who knows? Maybe there's...
I think there's a ticket left.
Yeah.
One ticket still available.
One ticket available.
Go to Ticketmaster.com for tickets.
And come on the cruise. Come on the boat.
That really does sound like
that
fun.
That sounds so much fun. Gilbert Gottfried, Lisa Lampanelli, all those people. Everybody sounds like a good time.
Friends of our shows.
Yeah, we've had them on. Many times. Guys, it's so cool to meet you.
Likewise.
Joe Gatto and then James Murray. They call him Murr. Great to meet both of you.
Great
to meet
you.
Thank you so much. A quick break and then more show ahead. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill Left and Wendy Snyder. Thrilled that you're here, and we want to invite you to join in the show in any way, shape, or form you want at 312-981-7200. That's right.
Jeez, it's right in front of you.
I know, but it's a lot of numbers. That is a whole lot of numbers, Wendy. And I didn't even do the dashes. I left the dashes out. 312-981-7200. Call us or text us.
I want to call someone on the show out.
Who are you going to call out? Did somebody do something to wrong you?
Not to wrong me, but it's just we were talking about the James Bond movie, and you said it just not a lot. It seems more men like the Bond movies than women.
I know there are women who enjoy it, but for the most part, the people who I know that are very excited about it are mostly guys.
And that's because I feel men aspire to be James Bond, and, you know, guys are always trying to throw down and feel better than other guys.
Right.
And our own producer, Kevin, did a little something this morning.
What did Kevin do?
Well, I was listening to the Steve Cochran show, and before I got here, a couple of Blackhawks were on the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Artemi Panarin.
Yeah.
And Viktor Tikhonov.
Right. The Russian connection.
It was really sweet listening to them talk, too, and Viktor had to translate for Artemi. It was really it was really cute.
They're good guys. They're great players. We met them a little bit before the show. You weren't here yet. But as they were guests on Steve's show this morning, I went and Kevin went and we met them, and they're very nice men.
And they're great hockey players, and Kevin was very excited to show me the picture of him with the two of them.
Right.
And the first thing out of his mouth was,
"Wait,
I think I could take him."
Whoa, I didn't say that.
Oh, Bill, you were there.
I don't remember how exactly it was worded.
You do.
It was worded something like that, Kevin. How did you
say it? I think I said we would be good workout partners.
Is that what you said?
I would like to spot him.
Is
on
that
the bench
what
press.
You said? I don't know.
That was after you looked up Artemi's picture with the. He packs a lot into his little body.
Oh, yeah.
Neither of the gentlemen that you mentioned are very. Like, when you see them, you're not overcome by their girth. They both seemed really young, really young.
Artemi looks like he's 12 years old.
Yeah.
And Steve Cochran was pretty sweet with him because it's like, I know you don't. It's tough to come to another country where you don't know the language.
I
Your daughter is involved in this right now.
Right. She's in Costa Rica where she doesn't speak any Spanish, and it's not easy.
And so Artemi on the ice, Steve said, you know, but it looks like you're loving it. And he does smile all the time.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't mean to break a guy code or anything, but, you know.
Well, it's what Bill was saying. They're just, you know, he's shorter than me, Panarin.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you guys have to always be the best?
It's not that. It's
Why
just that I'm better than him.
That's what it is. It's
no,
that
I'm
he's
not.
Better than him. Kevin's better than
not
him.
Not at hockey, but other things probably.
I don't know if you're even privy to this, but there was a thing that went on in my grade school, and I'm guessing most grade schools had this. Like, guys would quickly size another guy up, and then they'd go, "Hey, how about that guy in math class, that Dave? You know what? I could take him." That was like a constant
thing
for guys.
Does that still happen? Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. Like, as adults, you wouldn't, like a new guy who would come into the office, you wouldn't go, "Hey, Jerry in accounting, I could take him." That would never happen when you're an adult. Why?
I don't believe you. I believe that men still secretly size people up. Nah. They just maybe don't say it out loud now that they're adults. Your filters seem to start working for you when you get older, for most people.
I think what guys realize at some point in their life. And I swear to you, I never had this. I never looked at another guy and went, "I bet at some point he and I, it comes to blows. We're going to fight, I bet. So I wonder how I'll stack up against him." But there were guys all through grade school, even well into eighth grade. I don't remember. Oh, you know what? Honestly, in high school, too, freshman and sophomore year, there were still guys that go, "Hey, that guy over there could take that guy."
In the late 20s, it's still going on.
I think you were kidding, right? Weren't you, Kevin?
I mean, unless he crossed me or something, which he better not. Then we'd have a problem.
But isn't that normal? Isn't that what men are supposed to do from the caveman days? You size someone up because you need to protect your loved ones, your family, your food.
But caveman days were a long, long time ago.
Ugga.
You would hope.
Ugga.
Did you say Leslie Uggams?
No,
what did you say?
I did not.
At some point, like, we figured out we're not just going to have to fight. There's plenty for everybody. But that was a constant thing in grade school and early into high school.
It still goes on.
Isn't that weird? So when one of your boys says that, I could take that guy.
Michael doesn't say it. Dylan does.
What do you say to him?
I go, "Hopefully you don't have to come
down
to that."
That's the right answer. but girl, like my daughters would never say that about another girl. Their girl wouldn't pass go. And she'd go, hey, Debbie, I could take her.
And I am kind of a sensitive viewer. We had the Impractical Jokers on earlier, and I don't like mean pranks. I know you kind of do.
I do, yeah.
And I really cannot watch Cops. It makes me very uncomfortable when people are hitting each other and it's real life, not a movie. It really makes me uncomfortable.
Does this make it easier, though? Before they air that, they have to sign a waiver and they get a little bit of money. So don't you say to yourself, well, it couldn't have been that bad. They got paid their $320.
Have you watched it? It is bad, and I can't believe these people approve it.
I know. That's the strangest
that
part.
That makes me more upset.
I know. Because they know they're going to end up looking like such trash.
Oh.
But they just go, I'll sign that. Give me the money.
And it makes me really uncomfortable to see girls fighting. And you've been seeing that a lot on Facebook. There have been several instances in the news that have come up where girls are beating each other up. And it's really, really uncomfortable for me to watch.
Right.
I don't.
So they're posting their own videos, or somebody just happens to have a, well, everybody has a cell phone with a camera on it now. So
I don't
know.
It. Yeah. Somebody took a picture of two chicks fighting one time in a playground. It was terrible.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. Jay, what do you think about this? Do you size some guy up when he starts at work? Hey, I could take him.
First, a disclaimer. I am far from being a chauvinist, but Wendy, I couldn't disagree with you more. I think that you're
chauvinist.
Trying to...
I'm kidding.
You're trying to make the environment that women usually deal with into the man's side. I think guys don't do that at all. Older guys, I think maybe younger, maybe in your early 20s, and then it goes away. The guy sees a guy, he's like, okay, he's a good guy. Women, immediately as soon as another woman walks in the room, they're sizing it up, they're checking her out. What is she wearing? What is she drinking? How does she behave? How does she hold her, in the old days, her cigarettes? Is she a, you know what, a bee? Is she nice? They got that all sized up. Guys don't care.
But we're never. But Jay, never to the point of physical confrontation. A woman doesn't, when a new girl walks past, the girl's not looking at her going, yeah, if I had to fight her, I could probably finish up on top of that kid. But guys always, like in grade school and then like I said, high school, that's a constant thing for some weird reason.
And then it fades.
Yeah, right, hopefully.
Where I think the competitiveness, maybe the physical part, yeah, but the competitiveness will stay with that woman from the time she's 13 and she's wearing Zeke Cavaricci's and somebody's wearing whatever, a bell-bottom blues, to the one time she's 40 and she's got Michael Kors and the other one's got a Coach. So it's very competitive, in my opinion, from the female side versus the guys. Maybe not the physical, but I think that I can take him goes away when you're maybe 25, 26.
Oh, Kevin, you're right there. You're right there.
Kevin's a little older than that.
Kevin, you'll be okay next year.
Jay, may I comment on some of the things you said?
What's up?
Hey.
Absolutely.
What's up with you? What I want to tell you is when a woman walks past the window and Bill sees me do this all day, I'm not sizing myself up or comparing. I'm going, oh, my God, I love her boots. Remember we walked outside the other day?
I've seen you do that many times,
sure. I love that outfit. I'm going to go ask her where she got it. That's why I look at other women, not to compare, but to go, oh, that is so cute. However, I will say, when I go out with my girlfriends, I put more effort into how I look than when I go out with my husband.
Right.
Because you want to be the best looking one there.
There's the competitiveness. Nothing wrong with it. I just think it's, I just see it happen. That sizing up happens, I think, later and further in life with women. And it's not physical, more or less like, oh, you know, she's not this or she's not all that or she thinks her, you know what, doesn't stink. It's kind of where a guy was like, hey, he's all right. He was a good guy. I mean, I don't know, he drank beer with me. Okay, cool. I mean, and that's later on in life. Perhaps when they were 13, they were sizing each other up for the fight on the playground. I don't know.
All right. But,
well, thank you, Jay. We appreciate you calling.
Hey, take care.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, all right.
I could have taken Jay.
I could have taken Jay.
Right. Let's take a quick break. We've got a lot more coming your way next. This is Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
All right, it's Veterans Day today. And if you are a veteran, can we share with you a little something that you might want to do?
This is good news. This is very good news.
We should have done it probably earlier today. And I know you can find it at, we're going to put a link on our Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
Veterans Day 2015 freebies, full list of restaurant deals for today, November 11th, Veterans Day. offers good at participating locations. Uniform or military ID may be required as proof of service. God, who would lie about being a veteran?
That would seem pretty low, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we don't get through all these, which we won't, you can go to military.com and they will tell you where the freebies are today. Applebee's is offering veterans and active military a free meal from open to close today.
Oh, nice.
So you should definitely do that. Oh, my computer is freezing today. Bob Evans.
Down on the farm?
Near.
What are they giving?
Veterans and active military personnel get the choice of a free breakfast. A little late for that. So sorry about that.
Keep it in mind for next year at Bob Evans.
Bonefish Grill.
Yeah.
That place is good.
Very good.
They get free Bang Bang Shrimp.
One of their finest appetizers.
Yeah, but love that's bang inappropriate, bang isn't it?
Because of Bang Bang?
Yeah.
Maybe. Possibly. Maybe they should switch to a different appetizer.
Yeah, I don't.
Something a little less violent sounding, perhaps. All right, maybe. Think about that Bonefish Grill.
Here's some
they
other
pulled a bonefish. That's what they did.
Bill, how do you get a virus on your computer at work?
I don't know. Maybe some of the websites you visit are a little suspect. Maybe.
Cheeseburger in Paradise, free burger with fries today.
That's a nice offering. Good.
California Pizza Kitchens, they can choose from a free entree from a list of pizzas, salads, and pastas. Dunkin' Donuts, you get a free medium hot or iced coffee today. Great Clips, veterans get free haircuts.
Oh, that's very nice.
Hooters?
Good. What are you getting at Hooters?
A free menu item of their choice on a pre-selected menu today.
Good.
Little Caesars?
Yeah.
Pizza.
What are they giving?
A free $5 hot and ready lunch combo, which includes a small deep dish pizza and 20-ounce drink.
All right. It's still lunchtime. You can still get that.
Red Lobster, Outback Steakhouse, Starbucks, Texas Roadhouse, TGI Fridays, Uber. Veterans will be able to use the service for free transportation to jobs, interviews, and other employment events.
That's good.
And White Castle. Free breakfast slider with choice of small coffee or small drinks, so we miss that as well. But if you'd like to find out more, you can go to military.com and find out all the freebies today.
The good news about all that is, a couple short years ago, that list came out. I remember getting it when I was on the air, and it was one or two places. So now, just a few short years later, there's a bunch of different establishments that have realized we need to do something to recognize the vets, and they're doing it. So good.
I really feel that if there's an active service member in a uniform at a restaurant, they should get it free all the time.
It wouldn't be a bad thing, right?
I mean, I know that the restaurants have to pay for it, but I'm not saying their whole table, but maybe say, thanks for your service. We'll take your entree off the bill.
Right. There's a lot of. I've been in restaurants where a police officer will come in and sometimes get a similar.
At the donut store? Where? Is this going to be a donut thing?
I didn't say at the donut store. Just the opposite. I've never seen a cop in a donut place. I don't even think cops like donuts.
I really haven't seen one.
When I used to manage the video store in Downers Grove, there was a Dunkin' Donuts three blocks away, and there was never a day that I didn't pass by there that there wasn't at least one squad car there. And you wanted to say, you guys, you're playing into the stereotype. Even if you love donuts, just pretend you don't. Because people drive by and they go, uh-huh.
Although if you're, you know, just on patrol and checking out the area, I guess I'd go there too.
Right.
They're always open.
They are always open. Well, actually, now Dunkin' Donuts aren't all always open. There was a time where almost all Dunkin' Donuts were 24 hours. That's changed a lot.
And there are very few Dunkin' Donuts lately that make their own donuts.
I know.
The one near me does.
What a difference. It's so much better fresh.
Downtown here, when we worked at the other station, I would walk by and see this truck, and they would be unloading giant trays of donuts. And I'm thinking, time to make the donuts. You're not making the donuts here.
Right. Time to unload the donuts. It's not the same. I like them made on premises.
I bet you do.
Did you know, remember there were, for a long time, Dunkin' Donuts was always your donut leader here in town. But you also had Winchell's Donuts and you had Bosa Donuts. Remember those two? There's still a Bosa. Bosa Donuts was one of those things that I go, well, that's been gone forever. But I was in St. Charles 2 weeks ago and there's still one there. There's always like one that doesn't get the memo from the corporate office that all the rest of them are gone and they still hang on. It used to be in Niles. Niles had an Arthur Treacher's Fish and Chips like 20 years after all the rest of them were gone. There's still a Barnaby's there.
I went to it.
Did you go to that one?
I went to the, yeah, the one in Glenview. Because there is one in Glenview.
This one's in Niles.
Oh, we did go to that one. It's on Crawford or something like that.
So when you go in, don't you feel like saying to whoever's the manager, I don't know if you're aware of this, but every other one of your stores is gone. They're all closed. It's like they don't know, like they didn't pick up the mail that day or something.
It's like you used to see on Gilligan's Island, the Japanese prisoner of war, right. or the guy who was on the Japanese right. island, didn't know the war was over.
Right, it's the same thing, yeah. Your whole chain is gone, you guys. How could, I know you guys, I know I get it, you're Burger Chef, I get it, but all the rest of them are gone. How'd
Burger
you do that?
Burger Chef.
And Jeff, remember?
That vaguely.
Burger Chef and Jeff.
Is there still Huck Finn donuts?
Oh, I those haven't are on seen the those south forever. Side. I think those are gone, too.
Huh. Interesting. There is a Big Boy, we learned. Someone called,
yeah.
and there is
still
one remaining or two
right.
Big Boy.
And I always saw, I think I've told you this, I thought Rocky Rococo's were gone, and then I was in Wisconsin, and there's like one on every block in Milwaukee.
Yeah, they're big up there.
I don't know
everywhere.
What that is.
It was a pizza place. It looked like the logo looked like Father Guido Sarducci had given up the priesthood, and he joined a pizza place.
Was a raccoon.
And was also a raccoon. I forgot to mention, and also became a raccoon. But they, like when I was growing up, there were Rocky Rococos all over, and then they just vanished. But in Milwaukee, everywhere. And I know they started there, so maybe that has something to do with it.
Huh. I just go to the Cheese Castle, Mars Cheese Castle.
That's a
it's
good
always
move.
A fun time. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we have news coming your way next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Well, hello, kind sir. Will you push me on this swing?
It does feel like we're in a simpler time, doesn't it?
A little bit. Let me hoist up my skirt so it doesn't get caught on the rope of the swing.
Things just got a little more complicated.
A lot more complicated, Steve.
Push me.
Off a cliff, maybe.
All right. Come on. The Victorian era was a very romantic era. People cared about what they wore. They, in my opinion, overdressed.
Right.
I live in a Victorian house. It's a Queen Anne, which means there's a turret.
Yep.
A turret.
Comes in handy if the villagers ever attack your home.
Maybe. And I appreciate all things Victorian. Mm-hmm. And we are going to meet a couple who lives in Washington. And you guys, this is Gabe and Sarah Chrisman. You guys are living in the Victorian era now? Aren't you a few centuries off?
Well, actually, not a few centuries. The Victorian era was 19th century, so that's only one.
One century.
It was 1837 to 1901.
Correct, yeah. Our house was built in, they started building it in 1888, finished it in 1889.
And we're most interested in the decades of the 1880s and 90s. We're especially interested in the daily technology and just the everyday life of that time.
Right.
So do you have electricity? Yeah.
Well, they had electricity at that point in time. Our house had electricity when we moved in. We use it very seldom. We mostly, for light, we use our oil lamps. And then for cooking, we have a wood stove, which is a wonderful stove that is a refurbished antique that I just love.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an ice box.
You really do have an ice box.
We do, yeah.
Where do you get the big hunk of ice?
Well, we couldn't find as big a hunk of ice as we would like. So we just get the 10-pound blocks from the grocery store. Honestly, they would have had access to better ice in the 1880s or 90s than we do now.
And it was delivered back then. That was a standard. The Iceman would come by and give you a
the
giant.
The Iceman cometh.
The Iceman cometh. He would come by the house and drop off your ice.
That's right. And there were lots of risque jokes about Icemen for that very reason.
Right.
By necessity, they had to be strong because ice is heavy, and they were usually young. And so the idea of having a young, strong, often good-looking guy come to the house every week got people talking.
Yep. Is that how you met Gabriel?
No, actually, I met him
through another part of the 1890s and 80s. It was bicycling, and I actually met her at the end of a very long bicycle ride. I was visiting a friend at college, and my friend wasn't there when I got there after my long bike ride, and I ran into her instead.
Yeah, his friend was my neighbor and lived down the hall from me. And when he found his friend was not there when he arrived, he sort of collapsed on the floor because he'd just done a 120-mile bike ride, was it?
About, yeah.
And I came home and found this good-looking guy brawled across the hallway, blocking the door to my apartment.
Oh. How about that?
We're talking to Gabe and Sarah Chrisman, who live in Washington State. And come on, be honest. Neither of you have a smartphone?
No, never had cell phones. I've never even had a driver's license.
Horse and buggy, is that how you get places?
Bicycle.
All by bicycle. Wow.
I do drive more, but it's something that when I can ride a bike to get there, I will do that.
Because I'm sure you're both aware of this, most highway systems prohibit the use of a bicycle, so you kind of have to stay close to home if you're only going to ride a bike, right?
Well, there's always a back roadway.
Yeah.
There were plenty of roads that existed before the interstate system, and they're more fun to ride on anyway.
Yeah,
we've done trips that went up to 130 miles.
Oh, all right. And trains, I guess, would also be an option. They certainly had those during the Victorian era.
Yeah, we love trains.
Yeah, we had more than we have now.
Yeah. So what? The obvious question is,
what do you do for fun? That's the obvious question.
That's one of the questions. Let's start out with that. What do you do for fun?
Well, one of our favorite things to do is for Gabriel to read aloud to me while I sew.
Oh.
We both love to read.
Yeah, we do a lot of reading. We do a lot of, I mean, there's a lot of things that we have to do that we end up making into fun, whether it's gathering firewood or chopping firewood, whether it is
cycling.
We do a lot of picnics in the summer, which is a lot of fun with our bikes.
Mm-hmm. For me, baking is fun, and that's just also something that I do to keep things going because I bake all our own bread.
There's a certain amount of fun in restoring a lot of the antique things that we want to use and learning about how the technology works.
And that's the thing, is that the way that we live, everything about it, we do it because it's all fun for us, whether it's research into the time or using the technologies of the time. That's why we've chosen to live this way, because it's a way we live every single day where just living life is fun.
But
we like that.
Do you look at today's society in 2015 and say to yourself, these people are missing out. A simpler time was the better way to go. These guys just, they're not doing it properly. Do you ever feel that way? Is it that extreme?
Well, you see, I wouldn't call the Victorian era a simpler time because we had plenty of technology that is just different technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I do feel that by using those technologies where we can actually see how it's working, we do feel more connected to the world around us. And we do feel that some people are missing out by being just too disconnected.
And we also feel that, we don't necessarily want to try to convince anyone else to live the way we do. We're because we enjoy it. But I do want other people to look at what we're doing and realize that they could be doing things in whatever different way that they would really like to as well. That whatever ideas they have, whatever other times they enjoy or other technologies interest them, they should be an option. You know, you shouldn't feel like just the modern technology is the only option.
Right. And also just that we don't all necessarily have to be a cookie cutter copy of our neighbors.
Yeah.
That however anyone wants to live their life, that's a completely valid option as long as they're not hurting someone else. That they should just go for it.
How long have you guys been doing this?
Well, it's been very slow and gradual. It started about 6 years ago. And it's built from there. It started with the clothes, and then little by little, we added various elements.
So with the clothes, do the two of you always dress in Victorian styles? Is that an everyday thing?
Yeah.
Yes,
I do.
This all started when Gabriel gave me my first corset.
Can I guess where? Victorian Secret, right? Is that where you got it? No?
Actually, it was from a company called Timeless Trends.
Oh, all right.
But yeah, their first book was called Victorian Secret.
Oh, yeah. It was. All right.
And now, Sarah, you have written This Victorian Life, True Ladies and Proper Gentlemen, Victorian Secrets, and more. You can go to thisvictorianlife.com. I have to tell you, living in the old Victorian house, I think 1869 is when our house was built. And there is an addition in the back, so Victorian purists wouldn't like it. But we have a Victrola that works and old-time radios that you plug in that are beautifully sound. You know, they sound so rich and full, but I still need my smartphone and I still need a microwave and a washing machine. You guys wash your clothes by hand?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. And, you know, those are your choices, and you're welcome to those choices. We have ours.
So when you hear about things like television shows that are immensely popular or maybe a movie, you want no part of that, right?
Well, the thing is that we do these things because we like them. Yeah. I would rather be reading than watching TV, and that's just me.
All right. I grew up without a TV, so for me, I'm not feeling like I'm missing out. And I've always loved reading, and we have authors that we just absolutely love, and we try to tell people the same way people would tell us about whatever TV shows they think we should be watching. I tell everyone about Wilkie Collins, another favorite 19th century novelist that we just love.
All right. Yeah. So now, even with the books, it's nothing current. You're not reading any of the books that are hot properties now. Even the books are kind of a retro book, right?
Well, we tend to prefer the 19th century books.
Yeah.
We do read modern books once in a while, especially for research.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the times what we'll do is we're reading the 19th century books already, and then sometimes we'll read a modern book on the same topic to compare and contrast them.
Okay.
And more often than not, we find more similarities than you'd expect. Mm-hmm. You know, we find a great deal of connections between that era and the modern era, and it's really interesting for us to trace those connections and see how things have changed, but mostly how much things have stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate your individuality, and everyone should do what they want to do. The listeners have a bunch of questions for you that they've texted in. Do you guys have jobs?
Yes.
So I work at a bicycle shop. Mm-hmm. I manage a bicycle shop, and that's an example of the sort of technology that I really love that you can see and work with your hands and also just understand.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah's a writer.
Yeah, I'm a writer. You mentioned my books. And so the books use our experiences as a framework to tell the Victorian history and how it relates to modern life.
And that's thisvictorianlife.com. Another listener wants to know, what if one of you need medical help? And is cholera running around in your...
Oh, cholera would be bad.
Yeah, and all the Victorian diseases that were popular back then.
Is that a factor for the two of you? With modern medicine?
We don't have any health insurance, as a lot of Americans do. I mean, we just don't have the money for it, honestly.
Right. And a lot of people have that same problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Obama.
Yeah. Grover Cleveland. Come on, Cleveland.
Right.
You're ruining for everybody.
I'm in the wrong century. I'm sorry. Okay, and a final question here, 224 from the area code 224. Tell me, at least they drink. Do you have cocktails every once in a while and... You know, dance?
We don't drink alcohol.
All
right.
Bow and arrow is something we both really admire. And I've never been a drinker, and we just have we were that way before we started living this way.
Yeah, but we really enjoy researching the soft drink recipes that they had back then. And one of the really fun ones that we've discovered is that cyclists at that point, the favorite drink of choice of cyclists was milk with soda.
Oh, no.
So club soda with milk, which actually a lot of people have that reaction, the same one you just did, until I point out, well, it's just an Italian soda without the syrup in it.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And, you know, cocaine was in Coca-Cola back then, too, so hopefully you're not experimenting with that.
Stay off the cocaine, Gabriel and Sarah. Stay away from it.
How are you calling us? I'm just curious. Were there phones back then? Did you have to go through an operator?
They did have phones. They did go through an operator.
And actually, if we were doing this interview back then, we'd probably be using the telegraph system.
Oh.
And the office where the telegraph was is still right down the street from our house. And there's a nice little plaque on the wall that says this was the telegraph office, but the telegraph itself is long gone. And since it is long gone and you wanted to talk to us, we have to use a computer to make that happen.
Yeah, I guess.
That's the modern equivalent.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you. Port Townsend, Washington. You know, again, do what makes you happy. And if this makes you happy, who are we to judge?
It sounds
cool.
I mean, really, you guys have really committed.
It sounds cool for like a week. I'm sorry. I don't know that I could do this for all this time.
I couldn't do it forever, but yeah, for a few days. But you guys were really committed to this. So good for you.
Thank you.
And you can check them out, thisvictorianlife.com. Great clothes. I was going to say outfits, but no, these are your clothes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Gabriel. Thanks, Sarah. Take care. You seem unsure of this.
Can I just say...
Steve? What?
They're in Washington State, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
I would
suggest the Kevin told me to look at the website.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Go to thisvictorianlife.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll regroup.
All right. It's Bill and Wendy.
So they have a computer?
They had computers in the Victorian era. They just didn't talk about it.
It was a secret, pretty much. Yeah,
it was a secret.
There are demonstrations on there about how they do things like bathe and things.
Uh-oh. All right, we'll discuss that in a minute. Hold on. It's us. It's Phil and Wendy, WGN.
All right, we just got to know a little something about Sarah and Gabriel Chrisman, a married couple doing a long-term experimental study of culture and technologies of the late 19th century.
I don't think they're experimenting. I think they've settled in. I think they're going to continue this, don't you? They seem very into this. If I said to my wife, like if my wife said, hey, Saturday, it's me and you, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I thought I would read to you while you sewed. I don't know that that would go over very
well.
So
what?
Right.
Here, take this corset.
Right. I'm not sure I could sell that to her.
And you can go to thisvictorianlife.com. I got to tell you, it's a really cool looking website. And
yeah.
They have pictures of their home and some excerpts from her book, This Victorian Life. I kept up my habit of a thorough washing and scrubbing with a jug of water and a large bowl every morning, interspersed with a long soak in our clawfoot bathtub once or twice a week. This is...
That doesn't sound appealing to you?
Do you have the pictures of her washing her hair? Have you seen those?
Yeah. This is, I could not do this.
Steve loves those photos. He keeps bringing it up.
Well, I'm learning so much.
How long could you do this for? If somebody said to you, you need to start doing this today, how long would you last?
An hour.
Living in the Victorian, really, an hour?
Maybe 2 hours.
All right.
I couldn't do it for a week, and she was on The View.
As a guest?
Yeah.
Not as one of the arguing ladies.
No, because
ladies
didn't
argue back then in the Victorian era. Ladies would just nod at their husbands and the husbands would argue. That's how The View was back then in the 1880s.
I would appreciate it more, I think, if this is just like something they did.
For Halloween.
Well, they were like reenactors.
If they had two houses
right.
or something.
Well,
but look at all the people that do like the Civil War reenactment.
Right. Right.
Then I would appreciate it and learn about the Victorian era. But to live it for like 6 years.
That would be a challenge.
And to say you like it?
I think they do. I don't think she was kidding. I think they do like it. You don't think?
They're lying.
What do you do for fun? Well, I like baking.
It was different, Steve, yeah. You know?
No, I'm right. I sound like I'm making fun of him, and that was Kevin more than me.
No, it was not.
Kevin didn't say anything.
No. You should have heard him in my intercom the entire time.
You mean in our private time, Kevin?
I'm kind of intrigued by these people, though. There's no way I could make it 6 years.
Oh, no.
And then other people are saying, wouldn't it be more fun they should have picked the 1960s to grow up in? Because that would be more fun. Free love, nudity.
Right.
Now we're talking.
Maybe they'll try that next.
Alcohol, drugs.
Yeah.
By the way, I love the listener who said, do they at least drink alcohol?
No.
The guy grew up with no TV, so another listener says, doesn't know what he's missing.
There's something to that.
Don't they want to see The Martian?
They don't want to see The Martian. They didn't have Martians in the 1880s.
They go to the picture show where
yes.
their movie theaters
the kinescopes. Had? They go to see the kinescopes. And a
he
medicine
was
man.
He was funny.
Sometimes a medicine man comes by. They watch the medicine show.
I don't understand.
Wouldn't it be funny if the first show they watched was Downton Abbey?
Right. Now that's living.
Well, to each his own.
So advanced.
Yes.
And if they're happy, but I don't believe they're happy.
They're happy.
Why wouldn't they be happy?
They are very happy. They can't afford not to be happy. They don't have
they
health
can't
insurance.
Afford anything.
I know.
You see him on the big bike there. He's got the big front-wheeled bike.
Right. I got to tell you, listeners, check it out. ThisVictorianLife.com. I'm intrigued by them. I'll just put it that way.
That's fair. All right.
And so is Steve Bertrand.
Not so much,
no.
All right. And they didn't have beeps back in the 1880s.
No.
It's news time. That's coming up next. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here on 720 WGN. And I have been spending a lot of time at a psychiatrist and therapist's office with my kids. They have ADHD. I was diagnosed with ADHD. There's also some anxiety, some depression, and back in my family roots, there's bipolar. There's a lot of things going on that I didn't know anything about, and I think it's really important that we discuss it and bring it out in the open. And Patrick Kennedy, former U.S. Representative, feels the same way. How are you, Patrick?
Excellent. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You're co-founder of One Mind, founder of the Kennedy Forum, and also author of A Common Struggle. You've been very, very open about your personal journey through some issues that you've had.
Well, I honestly don't understand what the big deal about all this is. And we're just talking about brain health and brain illness like we should talk about any other physical health or physical illness. Now, with the rest of the medical system, we try to prevent people from getting sick. You know, that's the way we go. We screen you early for cancer so that it doesn't become stage four cancer. But with mental illness and addiction, what do? We wait until you become stage four before we ever begin to treat you, and that's if we treat you, because the insurance industry continues to discriminate against you simply because these illnesses have this stigma around them.
Well, what needs to happen, Patrick, for that to go away? We sure hope it does go away, but what needs to change for that to happen?
So obviously we haven't ended racism in this country, but we have begun to really make a difference in ending overt discrimination. You know, we passed the 64 Civil Rights Act, then we had the Voting Rights Act, fair housing, fair employment. The point is that we have to end the practice of discrimination, and we have the laws on the books. I am the author of one of those laws. It's called the Mental Health Parity and Addiction Equity Act, and what it does is it says you must treat the brain and brain illnesses like every other organ and every other illness of the body. And if you do that like you would do it with cancer or diabetes, then you set up a whole treatment system where people don't get as sick and they don't die as much. I mean, we're losing people by suicide now at roughly three times the rate of homicide. We're losing people by overdoses now over those that are killed by car accidents. So, I mean, this is an epidemic, and the reason it's gotten to this space is because we've been silent. Because everyone feels like this is a personal mark of shame rather than this as a medical issue that needs to be dealt with.
And what I'm thinking about is, again, you know, my kids were diagnosed with ADHD in second grade. They're almost 13 and 16 now. I was the mom who said, I am not going to medicate my kid. But then, you know, we did more tests and we tried a stimulant. You'll know right away if that's going to work. When you have your second grade son come home and say, oh my God, is this how the other kids feel at school? You know you've made a right decision. And people who don't experience this don't understand it. They will say to me, Wendy, how could you medicate your kid? Or when I say something like, you know, my dad was a bad diabetic. He had to shoot insulin in his body three or four times a day. He needed that because he wasn't producing enough insulin. My kids are not producing the right balance of melatonin or what is it, dopamine and all those chemicals in the brain, and they need a little kick to grease the wheel for them.
That's right. It's like any other illness. And what happens, however, is that these illnesses manifest themselves in behavior. But quite frankly, no one listening to us can honestly say to themselves that people get up in the morning and say to themselves, I'm going to go out there and act in a way that's going to alienate me from my family, my friends, and my community. I want to be the subject of ridicule. I want to be derided. I mean, that's what people who suffer from a mental illness and untreated addiction end up doing. And no one does it voluntarily, except we as a society ascribe this as a moral failing because we think, well, they should make different choices. It's not possible to make other choices when your brain is held hostage by this neurochemistry that you're talking about, because that is the root of the disease, and the symptoms of the disease are these behaviors that no one seems to understand is connected to the neurobiology.
And so many times people will say, oh, Wendy, you and Jim are not strict enough with your kids. You never know what's going on in someone else's house. And that's why we wanted to have you on today, Patrick, because we have to talk about it. Back, you know, I found out like maybe a couple years ago that my grandma years ago suffered from depression and anxiety. And I said to my sister, why didn't anybody tell us? Because they brushed it under the rug. It was it was showing weakness if we had some kind of mental imbalance back then. Well, it's not. We can't help it.
Right. Well, the Kennedy Forum Illinois is really pushing here in Illinois what we're also pushing on a national basis, and that is to have a checkup from the neck up. You know, when you go to your physician's office, you know, they ought to be checking your anxiety, depression, and they ought to be doing a family history, to your point, Wendy. I mean, we do a family history to know whether you're high risk for cancer or cardiovascular disease. And we ought to do the same for mental illness and addiction. That would mean that we would start to focus attention on those people who are high risk and do the necessary things that we know make a difference in keeping these illnesses from really being debilitating.
Patrick, what does medical science tell us about the genetic link? Are you more predisposed to it if you have a history of it in your family? You must be, huh?
No question about it.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of both, like every other illness, it's a combination of both genetics and environment. It's just like cancer and diabetes. You know, you have a genetic risk, but what do? Well, I eat too much sugar. Well, guess what? That's not good if you're high risk for being diabetic. So you're high risk for cancer. What are you doing? Oh, I'm working in a factory that hasn't had its asbestos cleared out, and I'm going to get cancer as a result. I mean, the bottom line is if you're a kid, you have it in your family, and then you grow up in the violence that many of these children here in Chicago will grow up in, guess what? You've got almost a perfect storm where, you know, you have the genetic risk, but unfortunately you also have the environmental triggers that often are the reason why people end up with these illnesses later on. So that's what we need to do, is approach it from both ends.
All right. So that is the Kennedy Forum Illinois Annual Forum and Gala that's going on today. Your website, PatrickJKennedy.net, is that where we send people, or thekennedyforum.org?
TheKennedyForum.org, and I hope people get to come online. If they've got denials, if they've tried to get treatment and they've been denied, we have an appeals process on the website. People can learn how to appeal their denial. We also want people to register if they have complaints about the way they've been treated by their insurance. This is the way we get empowered, and we push back against insurance discrimination of our physical illnesses.
I am all for this. Also, the book Common Struggle is available. You can get it. I know Barnes & Noble. Is it
Amazon.
On Amazon? It's all over the place.
Yeah.
So nice to talk to you, Patrick Kennedy, former U.S. representative. And a lot of people, you know, this as we celebrate Veterans Day, there are a lot of people that have served in various locations that come home when their tour of duty is over, and they have a lot of mental health issues. And I believe you are setting us up with Danielle Green, who we're going to talk to in the next segment. Is that correct, Patrick?
That's correct. And we have to thank Danielle and all of her fellow veterans. This is Veterans Day, of course, and so happy that we're talking about how we ought to do better by our veterans. Because many of them are struggling because of their service to our country from the signature wounds of war, traumatic brain injury, and post-traumatic stress. And I'm so happy to have Danielle here to talk about her own experience.
Well, thank you so much, Patrick. We will say goodbye to you. We will take a quick break and then come back and talk to Danielle Green. Patrick Kennedy, thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill, it is Veterans Day.
Yes.
And we were just talking to Patrick Kennedy. You can go to thekennedyforum.org. And mental health, addiction, we really need to talk about this stuff because we can't brush it under the rug anymore. It's okay. It's not a weakness. It's a problem that a lot of people suffer from. And right now we'd like to salute a veteran on Veterans Day. She is the Kennedy Forum event keynote speaker for today, Danielle Green. How are you?
I'm doing well, Wendy and Bill. How are you guys doing?
Couldn't be better, Danielle. First of all, thank you very much for doing this. We really appreciate it. Let's talk about it on this Veterans Day, about how mental health affects veterans. Go ahead, Danielle.
Well, it's a tremendous problem. You know, I told somebody this morning, you take someone away from their natural habitat, you take them to a third world country, and what do you do if you see a kid or a female or somebody with a bomb or a weapon that's aiming it at you? Well, your training is going to kick in instantly, and you're going to respond. Well, later on, you come back and you think about it. You don't get the proper treatment that you need your discharge from the military. You're told not to talk about it. Now you're back in society, and no one wants to hear about those issues. So then you develop post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety. There's a new phenomenon out there called moral injury, which is a psychological wound. You know, if I'm Roman Catholic and I've been raised thou shalt not kill, and I kill, well, that conflicts with my moral beliefs and values. And so we need to step it up as a society. And, you know, a lot of people point the finger at the VA, and they probably could do more, but I feel like as private citizens, this is a societal problem. And we need to, you know, work together, connect together, and figure out how to help our veterans who are psychologically wounded instead of automatically putting that stigma that they're crazy or that they're weak. There's nothing. What they're feeling is quite normal for what they've seen and endured.
Now, you're an Iraqi war veteran.
Yes, ma'am.
How long were you there?
I was there for 4 months from January of 2004 to May 25th, 2004.
Thank you for your service, first and foremost.
You're welcome.
Did you see American Sniper, the movie?
I did.
Because what I learned from that movie, and I have to be honest with you, we're not a military family, so I didn't have anyone coming home from overseas that I dealt with intimately that I would understand. But just the readjustment to society and the family's readjustment to that person who has changed greatly, did you see that brought it to the forefront a little bit? Was it accurate in your opinion?
You know what, Wendy, it's hard to say. I was there for 4 months, but it seemed very, very accurate and real for me because I was over there, like the sandstorm. You know, there was a scene in the movie where their command knew the sandstorm was coming, and they still send them out there in harm's way. And I think that's where distrust for leadership, distrust for government, it comes in. And then the veteran or the soldier overgeneralizes that, and they come back into society. And it's hard for them to work for people because there's that constant fear that this person who I trust, I respect, put me in harm's way. So I would say to an extent, yes, very different from my experience as a military police officer.
And what are some of the resources that are available to the veterans besides the VA, the Veterans Administration, to help the reentry into real everyday life again?
Well, the Veterans Administration, they have an entity that I work for, and it's called Readjustment Counseling Services, Vet Center Programs. And it was established in 1979 because when Vietnam veterans were returning from Vietnam, of course, they didn't have anyone to go to talk about their mental struggles. And there wasn't even a diagnosis. PTSD wasn't even recognized until 1980. So what vet centers are... it's readjustment counseling for returning combat veterans and veterans who report military sexual trauma. And at these vet centers, spouses or loved ones can also seek services. And there are 300 vet centers U.S.-wide. We also have about 80-something mobile vet centers. And what the mobile vet centers do, they go out to the rural areas or countryside areas where veterans don't have that access. And so these centers are... they're situated in the community where it's easily accessible by public transportation. And what we do is assess and treat post-traumatic stress disorder. We have substance abuse counselors. We offer bereavement counseling. We offer an array of different groups, focus group, anger management, PTSD groups, trauma focus groups. And so I'm a really big proponent and advocate of vet center programs, although it's part of the VA, but we act as our own entity.
If I may ask, Danielle, when you say that PTSD wasn't fully recognized until 1990, does that mean that they were...
1980. That's when it was in the DSM-3 at the time.
So they were calling it something different or just not recognizing it as a problem? What changed in 1980?
They were calling it back then shell shock, battle fatigue, you're crazy, oh, you're stoned.
Yeah.
And I think just... advocates, just different advocates say, wait a minute, there's something to this. You know, you see something and then you have this reaction afterwards that's irrational, dysfunctional, let's give it a name. So post-traumatic, so post is after the actual event and then trauma. And then I just think, you know, the professionals gathered together and that's when it came out in the DSM. 3 back in 1980.
You know, if somebody's suffering from a physical ailment as opposed to a mental ailment, no one's going to go up to that person and say, you're crazy. Like if somebody says, I have cancer, or I have diabetes, oh, you're crazy. But if you say, I am bipolar or I have anxiety or depression, people do say that. They say, oh, you're nothing's wrong with you. You just need to buck up. You know, that's not true.
No, it's not true. It's just a lack of education. It's a lack of awareness. And I was telling Patrick, you know, mental health is no different than physical health. But I think on another level, we have to start in the schools. I was talking to one of my good girlfriends. I really think the education prevention, it starts at the elementary level. You know, when you think about bullying behaviors and you think about low self-esteem and low self-concept and what else is out there, image problems and eating disorders, where does it start? It starts in, 10 years old, 18 years old. So what we need to do is allow people to do their jobs, the social workers, the psychologists, the counselors. You know, why is there a 300-to-1, you know, social work student ratio? Why are we calling these professionals who go to school and they get credentials and licenses, why are we calling them glorified paper pushers? So I think if we can set aside more money for the schools so the schools can start to educate kids, then, you know, when you come across these problems, it's not so foreign. And it's the same thing in the military. You know, we do a lot of PT, a lot of physical fitness. We go to the range constantly. But nobody says that, hey, you need to check in with the social worker or the psychologist just to make sure that your mental health is sound. So it has to be a shift, and it's a societal shift. That's not a veteran thing, because PTSD is just not relevant to veterans. Anybody who experiences some type of traumatic event, it's relevant. But we have to change the culture and become more educated and informed, make informed decisions.
And mental illness is not a weakness. It is an imbalance of brain chemicals, and we have to start talking about it. Danielle Green, thank you so much for speaking with us. Is there a website to find out more about those services that you mentioned for veterans?
I think if one does a search, Vet Center programs, and they will pop up. We have about maybe 15 in the state of Illinois alone. So I just type in Vet Center programs, and it'll pop up.
Thank you. Continued healing and continued success to you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks, Danielle. You too. All right, a quick break and then some news and then more show. It's us, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Don't make me dance.
Come on, Wendy, dance.
Don't make me dance.
Everyone's dancing.
Oh, you dropped me on
I
that.
I can't
deck.
Help it. It's somebody put butter on you. I'm very slippery. Who buttered Wendy? 312-981-7200. If you know who buttered Wendy, please call in.
Oh, you are a
This is a
nuts.
Mess. It's all buttery in here. It's time, Wendy, for strange but true facts about the movies. These are things about your favorite films that you had no idea were true, but they are true because they're on the internet.
Did you know these? Because are you even surprised by these?
I would say I was aware of about half of them, but I bet that they will confound you. I bet you will
I'm
be confounded.
Sure, you're right.
All right. Let's start out with one that is very close to home for you. In Star Wars, of course, the villain in Star Wars is Darth Vader. What does Vader mean in Dutch?
Vader in Dutch means father.
As it turns out, Wendy, the word Vader in Dutch means father.
Yay.
You got that one. How did you know that? That's pretty good.
I just guessed.
That is pretty good.
You know, Luke, I am not your father, yep. But, you know, or yep. I am whatever.
In Dutch. And it was originally written in Dutch, and they, at the last minute, dubbed it into English. I think it would have been better in Dutch.
And Darth Vader looked really good in wooden shoes.
Yes, he did. He wore wooden boots in the first in New Hope.
Plump, plump. Right. You could really hear him coming up.
Right.
And his lightsaber was shaped like a tulip.
Yeah, in the original, you can still find it online. In the original version, it was shaped like a tulip. E.T.'s face, when they made E.T., was inspired by two very, very famous people and also a pug dog. When they were developing E.T.'s face, can you name either of the two people that was the inspiration for the face of E.T.?
Hmm,
this is hard. I'll give you a hint. One of them is a poet, and the other is one of our greatest thinkers. Think about E.T.'s face. Does it remind you of anybody you've ever seen? One of them a poet, one of them one of our greatest thinkers and owner of his own chain of bagel stores.
I was going to say Einstein.
It is Albert Einstein.
But it doesn't look anything like Albert Einstein.
See, I don't think so
at
either.
At all. And I'm not talking hair.
Right.
Because obviously E.T. was bald.
Right.
But the facial features look nothing like it. And then a poet, Edgar Allan Poe, I don't know.
Carl Sandburg.
Oh, really?
So they went with Carl Sandburg, Albert Einstein, and then a pug dog.
Why the pug dog? Was it someone's famous pug dog?
It doesn't say here. It was
Charles Darwin's pug.
Right. Chuck Darwin's pug dog. That's absolutely right. You get extra credit for that. What is interesting about the line? Now, in Casablanca, anytime anyone would do an impression of Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca, they would always do the same line. Do you know what it is? This was a staple, like in the 60s.
Here's looking at you, kid.
No.
Frankly, my dear.
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't.
No, that's not it at all, Steve. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn was not from.
That was Gone with the Wind.
I didn't finish it. I just said, frankly, my dear.
Okay. Oh. There was more coming.
I can't remember it.
Every bad impression of Humphrey Bogart ever included Humphrey Bogart kind of leaning over the piano and then saying, play it again, Sam.
Oh, yeah.
That was the standard. What's the problem with that?
It's not accurate.
He never says it in the movie.
Why?
He never says it.
Everybody does it then.
It doesn't say this in the article, but I believe the quote is something along the lines with, you played it for her, Sam, you can play it for me. It's something like that.
Really?
But the impression always went, play it again, Sam. It's the same thing with Judy, Judy, Judy. Cary Grant never said Judy, Judy, Judy. They say it up in the newsroom all the time. Because Judy Pilek's always messing with stuff.
Well, what's here's looking at you, kid?
That they do say in the movie. They do say that.
Okay. In what movie?
It's Casablanca, isn't it?
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
And then they also say, we'll always have Paris.
You say that to your wife all the time.
Right.
You really do.
And then she reminds me that we've never been to Paris.
Yeah, but you'll always have it in your dreams.
We'll have it. It's just not there. All right. In It's a Wonderful Life, you know the scene where George Bailey is about to jump off the bridge into the cold water and he's saved by Clarence the Angel? If you'll remember correctly in that scene, it is snowing, but you can also see him sweating quite a bit. Now, I always assumed it's because he was about to jump into the river and he was nervous. He was going to jump into the lake. He was scared. It was going to be the end of his life. But it turns out the reason that he, Jimmy Stewart, was sweating so profusely is it was a 90-degree day there when they were shooting it and they were all wearing coats. So even though you see fake snow and it's supposed to be the dead of winter, it was a 90-degree day.
That's interesting.
I don't know why the angel wasn't sweating, but Jimmy Stewart
angels
was sweating.
Angels never sweat.
Angels do not sweat.
But they do want to wear your red shoes.
That's true, too. That's very, very true. This one I had not noticed. In Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire.
Never saw a Harry Potter movie in my life.
You never saw any Harry Potter movies?
No.
None of them?
Uh-uh.
Why are you boycotting?
I'm not boycotting. I just have had no interest.
You're not interested in seeing them? At the very end of the movie, you know how they always say in movies, no animals were harmed in the making of this film?
Yep.
At the end of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, you see the words, no dragons were harmed in the making of this movie. And the crowd goes bananas. Every time they see it, the audience just
really?
Goes crazy nuts. Yep. Nope.
That's one of the reasons I've never seen it.
Because you didn't want that sort of reaction.
No, overreaction. It's just, you got to be into that stuff.
No, that's true. That's true. In The Wizard of Oz, you've seen The Wizard of Oz.
Many times.
Toto was paid for his work in the film. How much was Toto paid for the making of The Wizard of Oz?
7 milk bones.
No, that's a great guess. Toto received the compensation of $125 a week.
That's pretty good for
a
dog.
Back then?
Yeah.
That's great money. That's insane money.
More than Rin Tin Tin ever got.
It doesn't say how much, but I bet you're right. I bet Rin Tin Tin never picked up that kind of cash. I have some more of these if you want them.
Let's take a quick break.
These are fun facts, things you didn't know about the movies, but they're true because they're on the internet. If you have any of your own, 312-981-7200. Back after this, it's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
312-981-7200. Why did my mouth just stopped working? We're wrapping up our show. Ro and Anna will be in momentarily. We were talking about things in movies that we may not have known.
Fun facts about the movies that turn out to be true.
Should we take a couple of calls
real quick?
We
can take some calls, sure.
Real quickly, I should say. Hi, Dave.
Yeah, Star Trek movies, he never says, beam me up, he says, beam me up, Scotty, but it's a myth. It's not in any of the wording in any of their movies.
The movies...
Even in a regular series.
So even in the TV show, Captain Kirk never said, beam me up, Scotty, even once in any episode of the TV show in Star Trek?
No, it's in all the literature about the show and the movies. It's just one of those urban myths that he says it.
Wow, how about that?
That's pretty interesting.
But
yeah, can I give a shout out to veterans today for
please.
Veterans Day?
Please, yes.
Do it.
Yeah, and also I'd like to give a welcome home to my son. He's coming home tomorrow. We haven't seen him in 3 years.
Oh, that's going to be fantastic. Good for you guys, Dave. Have a good time. Absolutely.
Thanks, Dave.
No beam me up, Scotty. Although, I'm pretty sure Dr. McCoy, you know, the joke on him, Bones McCoy, he's dead, Jim. I do think he said that in a bunch of episodes.
I'm just excited Captain Kirk was featured in Nana's 99 Red Balloons.
Yes.
Or such 99 Luft Balloons, yes. If you have
everyone
a
superhero,
one.
Everyone a Captain Kirk, she would say.
She would.
She said Kirk funny.
Kirk. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I'm calling because there's a movie called Three Men and a Baby with Celeste Holm and Ted Danson.
Yes.
And in the one scene when they're standing, which I think is in the boys' living room, there's a window behind them with long drapes on the window.
Yes.
And if you look at the background of that, there's a little boy standing behind those curtains.
And that was...
It's so creepy.
They say it's a ghost, but wasn't it just somebody in a reflection that was off camera?
Yes.
I don't know, but if you look at it, it looks real. I mean,
I did see it.
The little boy is real.
It does look pretty good.
It's creepy.
Thanks so much, Terry.
And there's a tie-in to Star Trek to that, too, because I think Three Men and the Baby was directed by Mr. Spock, by Leonard Nimoy.
Oh, you're absolutely
sure.
Right. And Gutenberg was in both of them.
Gutenberg's in everything. That guy's the best.
Vince, you have a little fun film fact for us?
Yes, in the classic North by Northwest, Cary Grant's in the lodge and he's just about to be shot. You see a little kid by a post. Just before Cary Grant is shot, he got his fingers in his ears so he can't hear the shot.
I've seen that picture. It's really funny. He knows what's coming, so he plugs his ears up.
Yep, and I don't know if they left that in on purpose or not, but figuring Hitchcock, you know, who knows?
Yep, very, very
cool. I got
to
look for that. Thank you, Vince.
Thanks, Vince.
Okay. Right.
I know there's a few texts, too. Do you want to get to those?
Somebody thought that Humphrey Bogart was the Gerber baby.
Not true.
You said that right away, yeah. And I go to Snopes all the time. And here's looking at you, kid. Snopes is reporting the status of false.
A long-time rumor, but it turned out to not be true. I don't think his age matched up to being the Gerber baby.
No, when the Gerber baby came out in 1928, he would have been 30. However, Humphrey Bogart, his mother was an illustrator. Her name was Maud Humphrey. It's Maud Humphrey Bogart.
Oh, cool.
That's weird. All right, so Maud Humphrey Bogart did a drawing of Humphrey when he was an infant. And
Is it strange to picture a woman with the name Humphrey Bogart involved? It
yes.
is, isn't it?
And that baby, the portrait that she made, that drawing was used in advertisements for a different brand of baby food many years before Gerber was founded. I didn't know that.
Do we know if Jodie Foster is really the girl on...
What, Coppertone.
It was Coppertone that was the rumor, right?
Yes. Let me look.
For those of you who don't know the ad, I'm sure everybody does... It's the one of the girl on the beach, and a dog is pulling down the back of her bikini bottoms. And I had always heard as a kid that that was Jodie Foster, but I don't know if it's true or not.
I think it was a combination of a pug dog and...
and Carl Sandburg and Albert Einstein.
Was Jodie Foster the model for the Coppertone girl, where her butt shows white?
Yeah.
Nope.
No.
In fact, when the original Coppertone ad debuted in 1959, Jodie Foster was not even born.
Ah. Was Humphrey Bogart the little girl who the dog was pulling
no,
down?
No, he was the dog.
He was the dog. Now, I do know one of a semi-celebrity that was on the label of a product that is true. Do you know the name Marilyn Chambers?
Yeah.
Adult film star.
Yeah, Behind the Green Door.
Wow, you do know.
Oops. Did I say that on the air?
No, it wasn't on the air. She was, for years, the woman on the bottle of Ivory Snow. I know that's real because she talked about it back when she was alive.
Yeah, I seem to remember that too.
Yeah. And the irony, of course, is that she was representing a product that was so clean and so pure and then went on to a career that some would say were not very clean or very pure.
No, not she's me. Still a nice lady.
She's still a nice lady.
Yes, Ivory Snow.
That is true, right?
Detergent boxes.
Yeah.
That's the cute little baby. She died at 56?
Yeah, she died very young.
Wow.
I don't know that your adult film stars have a long shelf life. I don't know that they
good
live for a
long...
Good
thing I picked radio.
Well, it's a good thing.
Because that was my other option.
Your career counselor at high school was way ahead of her time. All right, how about this one? A couple more quick fun facts about your favorite films. In Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the actor and actress who played Ferris Bueller's parents in the movie fell in love during the making of the movie and then got married in real life.
That's true?
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
In Back to the Future. Now, I was sure as soon as I saw Back to the Future it was going to have something to do with what we talked about a few weeks ago with the Cubs winning the World Series. Does not at all. In Back to the Future, Doc Brown uses a DeLorean to be his time machine in the original draft of the script to the Back to the Future movies. Instead of using a car, the DeLorean, the original time machine was going to be a refrigerator. Not as cool.
No, it's not.
Nowhere near as cool.
And kind of Doctor Who-like with the TARDIS.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
A phone booth?
It is a phone booth in Doctor Who, yeah. One of the James Bonds, of course, and there have been many. Actually, I think I'm the only person who has not played James Bond so far. Pierce Brosnan, of course, played James Bond for a number of films. When he played James Bond, they put a codicil in his contract that said that while he was playing James Bond, he was in no way allowed to wear a tuxedo when making any other movie that was not a James Bond movie.
Really?
Yeah. They were so protective of the image of James Bond that they did not want Pierce Brosnan to ever wear a tuxedo.
What if he was asked to stand up in a wedding or had gotten married?
He'd have to wear a smoking jacket. They would not allow any tuxedos on Pierce Brosnan. Now, it's weird because you would think then the studio, because it's been the same studio forever doing these, would have that same kind of clause for the other actors, but they're like, nah, you can wear whatever you want. Just not Pierce Brosnan.
And the Three Men and a Baby thing, was it a cardboard cutout? Because that's what somebody is saying.
Yeah, I think it was a cardboard cutout on the side. It's not really the ghost of somebody who perished on the set.
Yeah, no.
It's just a cardboard cutout.
And in the song Love Roller Coaster by Ohio Players, there is a kind of a scream, and it was rumored to be in the next suite of the recording studio. Someone was getting murdered, but the recording studios are soundproof.
Right.
And no, that's not true.
Not
either.
True either. How about that? All right, a quick break, and then we'll find out what Rowan Anna have.
Wait,
yes.
You guys, the TARDIS is a London police box. That is completely different than a phone booth.
No, but you were saying it's shaped like...
I'm sorry, I never saw...
What'd you say it was?
I said it was a phone booth. That's what it looks like.
Right. It does, kind of.
Sorry, I probably watched one episode of Doctor Who.
That's all right. Don't feel bad. Ro and Anna coming in next. They'll tell us what they have coming up on their show. It's Bill Luff and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.